Morning, councillors. Morning, members of the press and public in the gallery this morning. Can I start by acknowledging the Quandamooka people who are the traditional custodians of the land in which we meet here this morning, and I'd also like to pay respect to their elders past and present and respect that, extend that respect to any other Indigenous Australians who are present this morning. Just a reminder in regards to evacuation, if we need to head down that road, I'd ask you to remain calm and follow my directions. The emergency exit is through the gallery doors on your left and down the stairwell to the exit on Bloomfield Street. Just a quick run through of the public conduct at meetings under section 32 of the standing orders, just for the members of the public present at this meeting. Not without prior approval of a chairperson, are you able to make any audio or video recordings or take any photographs? Remain quiet and not disrupt the meeting in any way. You're not to bring any meeting into the meeting any signs, placards or items that may cause a hazard or interfere with any other person present. We ask you to be suitably dressed, to turn all mobile devices to silent mode, and please leave the meeting to take any phone calls. As chairperson, it is my responsibility to warn a member of the public present at a meeting who is not complying with any of these or all of these requirements that I may, with or without such warning, require that person to leave the meeting and not return for such a period as decided by the chairperson, and that could include future meetings. Haven't been advised of any leaves of absence this morning, so it's with great pleasure I invite Josh Schwartz of Shore Hope Presbyterian Church, who's also a member of our Minister's Fellowship, to lead us in a brief devotional segment. Over to you.
Thank you, Karen. Thank you for having me, Mayor, councillors. It's great to be here. As the Mayor said, I'm a minister. I'm actually filling in for Russell, who's the minister of Shore Hope Church down at Redland Bay. I'm the minister at Capella Bar, a church in Capella Bar, Redlands Presbyterian. And I'm really thankful that I get to come and speak to you this morning. I was thinking after the election, I'm sure the election is probably looming large in our minds, having just happened. And it has kind of, it was interesting, wasn't it, to see and listen to some of the fallout from what it was a surprising result. Particularly in the way that the media, and I think the public at large, talk about now Scott Morrison in this kind of unexpected result. People have been saying, well, he has now got a position of greatness within the Liberal Party for bringing about what was a surprising, unexpected result. On the flip side, Paul Shorten has been described as copping a lot of the blame for a failure of their campaign. I think it's interesting how we see and view greatness. Greatness is often understood in terms of being successful, making it to the very top, and getting there in spite of opposition. This morning I just thought, I want to just talk about what Jesus taught about what true greatness was. I just want to read you some words from the Gospel of Matthew. Matthew chapter 20, starting at verse 20. Then the mother of Zebedee's sons, James and John, she came to Jesus with her sons and, kneeling down, asked Jesus a favour. What is it you want? He asked. She said, well, grant that one of these two sons of mine may sit at your right and the other at your left in the kingdom. You don't know what you're asking, Jesus said to them. Can you drink the cup I'm going to drink? We can, they asked. Jesus said to them, you will indeed drink from my cup, but to sit at my right or left is not for me to grant. These places belong to those for whom they have been prepared by my Father. When the ten heard about this, that's the rest of the disciples, they were indignant with the two brothers. Jesus called them together and said, you know that the rulers of the Gentiles lord it over them, and their high officials exercise authority over them. Not so with you. Instead, whoever wants to become great among you must be your servant, and whoever wants to be first must be your slave, just as the Son of Man did not come to be served, but to serve and to give his life as a ransom for many. As a parent, I can relate to the mum of James and John. She wants great things for her boys. She believes that Jesus is the Christ and he will bring his kingdom. and she wants her boys to have a seat at the table. Not just any seat, one to the right and one to the left of the king. And I think that's kind of the way we often think about greatness, isn't it? We want to have a place of prominence, a place of privilege. Jesus uses this moment to talk about what true greatness is, and he talks about the fact that there's actually an enemy to greatness. There's an enemy within the human heart, and that is the enemy of pride. Kind of seeking to have a sense of prominence among a community of people, often at the expense of others. And it's interesting, now that pride not only exists in the mum, she wants something good for her boys, it exists in her sons too, they were pretty happy with her request, but it also existed in the other 10. They were indignant, the scripture said. There's a sense in which it's pretty obvious that they wanted those seats. They wanted those seats at the table. Jesus uses this moment to teach about true greatness. He says, listen again what he says, you know that the rulers of the Gentiles, that's non-Jewish people, lorded over them, and their high officials exercise authority over them. Not so with you. Instead, whoever wants to become great among you must be your servant. Whoever wants to be first must be your slave. Jesus redefines greatness as a way of serving others. It's working toward what's best, not for us, but for our friends, our family, our community. As a minister in the city of Redlands, I have a position of leadership and authority, and I have to admit, I'm pretty prone to the enemy of greatness. I'm pretty prone to pride. It's very easy for me to kind of want things to go well because it's a good reflection on me. Jesus actually calls me to something more than that, to do what's best for the people that I oversee, the people of my church. Jesus calls me to serve others, to see myself as a helper of others. And you know the great thing about Jesus, and this is why I'm a follower of Jesus, this is why I believe he is my Lord, is Jesus just doesn't teach this, he lives it. So I want you just to listen to the last thing he says. He says, whoever wants to be first must be your slave, just as the Son of Man, he's talking about himself there, that's a common way he refers to himself, just as the Son of Man did not come to be served, but to serve, and to give his life as a ransom for many. See, Jesus came to serve. And he did that by laying down his life. He laid down his life to save his people from their sin. He saved them from their slavery to themselves. Because there is a very strong sense that we are enslaved to ourselves, to the pride that's within us. And so for Jesus, greatness did not involve climbing up. Greatness actually involved coming down. Jesus was born to poor parents. He lived a pretty ordinary life. He came to mix it with the mess of our lives, to heal, to forgive, and to bring transformation. And he did that at the cost of his own life. Now, as a minister, I need to be reminded of that. I need constant reminding of that. I need to be reminded as a parent, too, that what's best for my kids isn't necessarily their success, but they are people who live to serve and love others. And today, I've heard that you've got a big meeting. I'm thankful for the work that you do, because I know making decisions are complex, they're difficult, there are a whole bunch of different voices speaking in. I ask you to reflect upon the Lord Jesus. Make your decisions with a heart that longs to serve the community. And I'm thankful that you do that. Let me pray for you. Mighty God, Lord, we give thanks to you for your Son Jesus. Lord, he shows us what true greatness is. He came not to be served, but to serve and to give his life as a ransom for many. Heavenly Father, Lord, so often within our hearts we just have this desire for prominence, for success, for the spotlight to be on us, and we battle with that. Father, may the example of Jesus stand to us as a light, Lord, that he came to serve. And I pray that in the business that is discussed today, that our councillors and our mayor would do that, that they would serve our city. I give thanks to you that they have willingly committed themselves to doing that. And I pray for the meeting, and I ask this in Jesus' name. Amen.
Thank you.
Thank you, councillors. Next item on our agenda is declaration of interest on any items of business. Councillors are reminded of their responsibilities in relation to a councillor's material personal interest and conflict of interest at a meeting, and you have a summary of that with your agenda, and it's written under the Division 5A of the Local Government Act 2009. Details of these responsibilities are outlined, as I've said, in your agenda, and I'd like to remind you that you can make those declarations any time during this meeting. Councillor Hewlett, you've raised your hand.
Yes, thank you, Madam Mayor. I have a perceived conflict of interest with item 19.10, which is should be in confidential. It hasn't been accepted yet, so I'd like to just put out that now.
Okay. What we might do, Councillor Hewlett, we might actually bring that onto the agenda first, and when we bring that on, we might take it there. I think it just makes sense from a minuting point of view.
I understand. Thank you.
Yeah, but with that, I would also like to declare a material personal interest, councillors. Item 13.5, the Healthy Land and Water Network Member Agreement. Just as a member of the South East Queensland Council of Mayors, I'm appointed to the Board of Healthy Land and Water, for which I receive a sitting fee, so I'll declare that as an MPI, and I will be leaving the room. Okay, moving on, recognition of achievement. I understand, Councillor Boglari, you'd like to talk about WOW today.
Yes, thank you, and I know you're right on it because you've got orange on today, so thank you very much. And I thought how... Oh, you've got orange too, sorry. And also, yep. Hit a salmon. Okay, thank you, councillors. I actually thought how fitting that the minister just mentioned helpers of others, and today is WOW Day, which is Wear Orange Wednesday, to support our SES. So the SES is Queensland State Emergency Service, is a non-for-profit organisation that is supported through a partnership between the state government and local councils such as ourselves, and it's all for the benefit of our community. Over Queensland, there are over 6,000 unpaid volunteers from a variety of backgrounds and professions who respond to emergencies and disasters 24/7. They are trained and equipped to help our communities across a range of functions. Here in Redlands, there's absolutely no doubt that our SES volunteers have a serious wow factor. Today, we're wearing orange to pay tribute to our wonderful orange uniform volunteers, of which there are over 170 in Redlands. Our SES volunteers provide assistance to our community, helping the most vulnerable in emergency situations in every type of situation imaginable. Storm damage, chainsawing to clear fallen trees, land search, forensic searches, and that includes also being called out by police, air observers, radio operators and flood boats. They also provide agency support such as transport of meals and personnel for firefighting, incident management and marshalling, traffic management and education at community events. Our Redlands SES also are ready to assist other communities, as they have done previously, in being deployed to far north Queensland, Gold Coast, Gympie, and they also train with other units and agencies for exercises. So with our SES, I am extremely proud to boast that Redlands has an outstanding group of volunteers here in Redlands who are always willing to help, and they have won several state awards over the years, and recently they just came fourth in the state rescue competition, and that was no easy feat. Our SES is a friendly group who train hard to empower themselves to assist others, and they also have a laugh along the way if you ever go out with them in a truck. Today I actually asked to borrow a shirt to wear, and I actually couldn't put it on because I know the dedication and time and the commitment that the SES give, and I honestly did not feel worthy to wear it today. So on behalf of our fellow councillors, I say a huge heartfelt thank you to our orange volunteers, and I know the number of times that we have seen them in action, and I know they won't let us down in the future either. So I'd like to ask everyone, get on their Facebook site today and give them a message so they just know how much we really appreciate them.
Our SES teams here in Redlands are outstanding. If I could also just take this opportunity to recognise the incredible community that we saw come together at the Dinner en Rouge event that is the mayoral fundraiser for domestic and family violence on Saturday night. Firstly, I'd like to acknowledge the people that have supported it for many, many years, in particular the steering committee, members of Zonta, Sir Optimus, Rotary, and obviously people who have supported in other ways through donations, etc. So the great news is that as a result of having a target of 200,000 by 2020, we have well and truly surpassed that. On Saturday night, I was able to announce that, in fact, we've raised over $330,000. Along with that, a similar value tenfold, I suppose, in the awareness of those issues here in our community. I'd like to once again acknowledge Dan Holtzapple, who committed another $50,000 last week. It's an outstanding effort not to be seen in anywhere I know of in the country, and I do mix in those circles, so we should be incredibly proud of our community here in Redlands who get behind supporting those who are impacted by domestic and family violence. So thank you to all of those involved. No other recognitions of achievement. I'll move on to receipt confirmation in minutes. Could I have a mover and seconder for the minutes of the general meeting held on 5th of May to be confirmed? Councillor Gleeson moved. Councillor Edwards seconded. Any items of correctness? I'll put the motion. Those in favour? Against? That's carried unanimously. Matters outstanding from our previous general meetings, I'll hand over to the CEO.
Thanks, Madam Mayor. A couple of items here. One is the opportunity to participate in a joint local government activity, the regional approach to waste and resource management. That report will come towards the end of the year. And the second one is the purchase of land for conservation purposes at Ormiston. That resolution required a report to come back to council by the 30th of June, and that will happen. Thank you.
Thank you, CEO. Public participation. In accordance with Section 31 of our Policy 3127, council meeting standing orders, a period of 15 minutes may be set aside, made available by resolution to permit members of the public to address the local government on matters of public interest relating to our local government. Priority is given to those members who actually make a written application to do so. So I do have a couple of people that have advised that they would like to address us this morning, Councillor. So can I please have a mover and seconder that the meeting adjourn for a 15-minute public participation segment to allow members of the public to address Council on matters of public interest pertaining to local government? Moved. Councillor Bishop seconded. Councillor Gleeson. Those in favour? Those against? That motion is carried unanimously. Our first written applicant is Mr. Stephen Komorowski regarding the Moores Road Farm car park at Redland Bay. Would you like to come forward, Mr. Komorowski? Just as you're approaching the podium, you may have noticed the signage in the chambers regarding public participation at meetings. It is Council's usual practice to require any person wishing to address the meeting to state their name and suburb or the organisation that they represent and the subject they wish to speak about. This information is recorded in the minutes of the meeting, which is a public document available for inspection at Council's Administration Building and published on Council's website. Also advise that the meeting is being recorded in audio video and that by speaking you acknowledge and agree that the recording video may be placed in the public domain. Just before you start, just a reminder to state your name and suburb or the organisation you represent and the subject you wish to speak about. Stand unless you're unable to do so. Act and speak with decorum. Be respectful and courteous. Make no comments that are directed at any individual council employee, councillor or member of the public, ensuring that all comments relate to council as a whole. As chairperson, it is my responsibility to consider each application on its merits and any relevant matter that in making my decision to allow or disallow a person to address council this morning. As I've already stated, we give priority to members of the public who have made a written application. I get to determine the maximum number of speakers based on the persons wanting to speak and the time available. It's also my responsibility, if necessary, to withdraw the approval to address council before the time period has elapsed. Just one more point. Debate and discussion can't be entered into at this time, Mr. Komorowski, so you can start when you're ready. Thank you.
Good morning, Madam Mayor, councillors, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Stephen Komorowski, and I'm here this morning because I'm a deeply concerned citizen of Redland Bay. I'm here like many others in our local community who are also deeply concerned. The proposed 600 car park space by this council on Moores Farm, Redland Bay, will be right in the middle of a quiet seaside community with very little consultation with the local residents. Like many others, I considered the Redlands as an amazing place to live and raise a family. And again, like many others, never have wanted to live adjacent a mega car park. The community we live in is caring, quiet, and full of native wildlife. The area to me is paradise. Weddings along with school formal photos are often seen along the foreshore we call the Boulevard at the end of Moores Road. Councillors, though it is understood that there needs to be progress, many of us believe that progress should be in line with community expectations and for our family futures. Madam Mayor, I wish to have tabled a petition against the proposal of a car park on the southern side of Warnham Creek, known as Moores Farm, and after my speech, with your permission, I will give these to Mark Edwards, our local councillor, Division 5. If I could continue. There are many issues concerning this development proposed on Moores Farm. However, I'd like to mention just a few of them. The area is flood prone, and it is the basin for all new housing estates in the area. Mitigating this flood water during heavy rain events combined with high tides will be a miracle in itself and raises serious safety concerns with people using that car park. The increase of traffic will be a concern, as the local community roads were never designed to cater for a 600 car park space, including the medium density zoning by this council for small lot homes and townhouses. The adjacent Orchard Beach estate will become a traffic rat run for people heading south through the estate, including cars towing boats, using the estate as a shortcut. Many residents enjoy walking along the foreshore of the estate for the daily commute, or young families with children and bikes, the elderly people walking their pets. As a deeply concerned citizen, I'm appealing to council to make a simple action as soon as possible and have the Orchard Beach estate blocked off at the end of Moores Road, turning right into the Boulevard. This will address a safety concern and perhaps bring a small amount of relief to the locals in the area, including the residents of Orchard Beach. For our family-orientated community, the adverse effects of road safety and crime that already occur on the existing parking areas on the north side of Warnham Creek is a significant concern to all of us. I have seen a family come back from the bay in their new boat only to return to no car or trailer, the wife and two small children crying in the boat whilst their father was frantically searching for a way to remove his boat from the water on a Sunday afternoon, let alone get his family home. We came here to raise our family in a safe, quiet environment, not a car park that will attract traffic congestion and more crime. Lastly, the proposal to relocate the existing boat ramp from the north side of Warnham Creek to Moores Farm is also a serious concern. One family directly affected will not only have a car park behind them, but they'll also have a three-lane boat ramp beside them. Boat trailer traffic, early hours and late into the night will be an absolute nightmare. So ask yourself this question. Would you want to live next door to a car park and a three-lane boat ramp? The consistent silt build-up at the end of the creek will yet be another concern and a problem and prove costly for council. At the narrow end of the creek, there is little room to manoeuvre a small boat, and the local boating community believe it will be a safety concern. Madam Mayor, councillors, the people in our area have worked hard to purchase their family homes in this quiet Bayside suburb. It wasn't the cheapest place to buy in the Redlands, but at the additional cost has always been worth it. This decision by council has turned my family, like many others, upside down. And we do not want to leave an ugly legacy for our children in the future. This morning, I wanted to appeal to your sense of empathy and compassion to please not pave our paradise and put in a parking lot, because that is exactly what you'll be doing if this development goes ahead. Thank you, Madam Mayor, ladies and gentlemen, and councillors.
Thank you, Mr. Komorowski. If you want to pass that petition on to Councillor Edwards. I believe you've been advised that because it's open for public consultation at the moment, that that will be considered as part of a submission towards that process. Thank you. Okay, we also have another speaker. Ms. Grosvenor, if you'd like to approach the podium, thank you. Just state by your stating your name, suburb or organisation you represent, and I think you know the drill.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks very much, Madam Mayor, councillors, ladies and gentlemen, and thank you for the opportunity to be able to speak to you again at council. The last time I did this was in December last year, 2018, and it's basically about the same concerns that I have for the Wynnum Creek PDA yet again. Thank you, Steve, who's one of our local community members, for speaking on behalf of the community.
You just need to introduce yourself, Juanita.
Oh, sorry. I've been here so often, I think everyone knows me. Sorry.
We just need it for the record.
Yep, so. Certainly. I'm Mrs. Juanita Grosvenor, and I am a resident of the Orchard Beach Estate in Redland Bay, and I live not far from Moores Road, where the proposed car park is planning to go. I don't want to be critical today of council. I know you have a very difficult job to do, even in the best of circumstances, but I'd really like you to rethink this whole PDA situation and the planning that is currently before the Queensland State Government. I think we can all do better with the planning before this is all set literally in concrete, because we really only have one time to get this right. We have one chance to get this whole situation sorted out for a whole heap of different people, from the Simbi ferry commuters to the people who live locally at Redland Bay, to the people who use Cleveland-Redland Bay Road every day, where the majority of this extra apartments and future population expansion of the Simbi Islands are going to use. We have incredible pressure already on our current road systems, our hospital and health and emergency services. We know that the Queensland State Government is not keeping up with our essential infrastructures and with all this extra development that we know that we have to have to cope with all this increase in population in any case, because this is what the Queensland State Government has mandated. We just need to plan it better. We just need to really plan it in a more holistic way and use the great amount of intellectual brains and expertise that we have got at council to come up with more sustainable alternative solutions to the problems that keep presenting at Redland Bay Ferry Terminal in particular. The mainlanders at Redland Bay are really sympathetic to the plight of the Simbi commuters. We're really sympathetic to their car parking congestion problems, and we know that they really do need better solutions to what they already have, but I'm really concerned that the current PDA planning that's being put in place at Wynnum Creek is not going to solve their long-term problems. We have an incredible amount of apartment blocks that are now being proposed to be built within and around the boundary of the Wynnum Creek PDA. Those apartment blocks will need excess or overflow parking for their family and friends. We have shops and restaurants and cafes that are being proposed to be built underneath or around the multi-storey car park that will eventually go near the ferry terminal. And these customers and visitors and service people to those businesses are also going to need parking. So a couple of solutions that I've been thinking about, apart from the one that I came to you with last December, which was to please lobby the Queensland State Government for some sort of alternative to their water transport base needs, which is a cable car barge, which is should run from the southern end of Redland Bay over to the southern end of Russell Island. This actually helps two things. It helps ease the current car parking congestion problems that we already have at Redland Bay. It also gives them a really good evacuation escape route in the event of another catastrophic bushfire. But we have seen a couple of those now, cut off access for the southern Russell Islanders to the northern end of the evacuation centres when Centre Road has been cut by bushfires. So it is basically two positives there, for starters. But even that is not going to basically solve the problem that you've got with like a parking at Wynnum Creek. So we're going to have to build car parks one way or the other. What I'd like to suggest as an option is, instead of selling off the two lots at Meisner Road to developers to develop medium and high density buildings, residential buildings, which creates more car parking problems in the area, is to actually begin a first stage multi-storey car park for the Redland Bay Ferry Terminal at Meisner Road on these two lots. Council already owns that land. I'm sure that the cars that are already parked there, and I believe it's between 60 to 100, could possibly be accommodated in the current Wynnum Creek area with some of the private parking institutions, the Redland Bay Community Hall, and possibly some of the vacant land that council also own there in Banana Street. And we could begin building this multi-storey car park that the Simbi commuters really do need at Meisner Road. This negates the need to spend any more money at Moores Road farmlands, which we know is zoned as a council flood and storm surge area and is always going to have that problem. We do appreciate you installing the solar-powered flood warning signs there on Wynnum Creek Bridge, because that has been a real safety issue late at night when the road's been flooded and the lighting there has been impossible for people to pick up until it's too late and they're actually in that water up to their knees, basically, in their car. So we do appreciate that. And I'd really like you to consider just taking a breath before we do any more digging up of Moores Road. This week, the digging began for the 9 small lot houses there along Moores Road. I ran council, the EDQ, and our local divisional council and left a message that there'd been no environmental safeguards put in place to stop any stormwater runoff in the event of inclement prolonged weather, it happens a lot at Moores Road. It is flooded in the centre of Moores Road farmlands as we speak, and it has been for months. There was absolutely no environmental safeguards put in place. I am very happy this morning to see that some have been put in place, but it's not enough with the amount of soil that's been moved, and more will be moved in preparation for the engineering and excavation works for these homes. So while I appreciate everything that is being done, I want to quote Alec Baldwin and just say, you can do better. and I really hope you do. So thank you for the opportunity of speaking today. And please, I really hope you listen to what Steve has said. He's said it from the heart, as have I. And we just appreciate that you really take a really good, long, hard look at this. My husband works in the commercial building company industry. We work for a global company that's based in Germany and Singapore. We're currently working on the three-tower dual buildings down in Surfers Paradise. We helped build the current Parliament House for 3 years. We've helped build Sunshine Coast, Robina, and the Children's Hospital in town as well. There's not one major building in the CBD, the Gold Coast or the Sunshine Coast that my husband's company that he works for, which is a global company, hasn't had a hand in. So we know good development when we see it, and we know that we can get the best of all worlds here, where we have good development, we still can enjoy all the wonderful things that the Redlands has to offer in the way of nature and the environment, and we just need to get a really good balance between all three. So thank you.
Thanks, Scrivener. Councillors, can I get a mover and seconder that we resume meeting proceedings? Thank you. Councillor Edwards moved that. Councillor Hughes has seconded that. Those in favour? Those against? That motion is carried unanimously. Thank you, councillors. Now, I haven't been advised of any petitions or presentations, so I'll move on to the order of business. We do have a couple of late items, councillors, so if I could firstly get a mover and seconder that confidential report deed of variation be accepted and discussed as 19.9 on the agenda. Move Councillor Edwards, second to Councillor Gleeson. Those in favour? Those against? The motion's carried unanimously. Councillor Elliott's left the room. We also have another late item, Palazzo Property Group versus Redden City Council. Could we please have a mover and seconder that we receive that confidential report to be accepted and discussed as item 19.10 on the agenda. Move Councillor Gleeson, seconded Councillor Bishop. Those in favour? Those against? That motion is carried unanimously. Councillor Elliott is absent. Councillor Hewlett, would you like to declare your perceived conflict?
Yes, thank you, Madam Mayor. I, Councillor Lance Hewlett, declare that I have a perceived conflict of interest. The owner of the company which is the subject of the PD Court Appeal in the confidential report 19.10 was a sponsor of the Redlands Community Breakfast, which was organised by my wife. And I propose to exclude myself from the meeting while this matter is debated and the vote is taken.
Thank you, Councillor Elliott. Councillor Hewlett, sorry. My apologies. Sorry. As you're excluding yourself from that discussion, we won't require a vote on that, councillors. Okay, Councillor Mitchell.
Yes, I'd also like to declare a perceived conflict of interest on the same item, 19.10. I'm the Vice President of a not-for-profit community group, Redfest, of which Stuart, the owner of the company in question, Palacio, is also on that committee. So I've considered my position and firmly of the opinion that I can participate in the debate and vote on this matter in the public interest.
Thank you, Councillor Mitchell. So therefore, we have we will now be required to vote firstly if we believe that Councillor Mitchell actually has a perceived conflict. So if I could, just making sure I get this in the right order. So that Council resolves that Councillor Mitchell has a real perceived conflict in item number 19.10. Move Councillor Bishop, seconded Councillor Gleeson. Those in favour? That you do have a perceived conflict? We'll walk through it. So he's declared he has a perceived conflict. So we've got just hands up again who supports that. Okay, so that is carried. So I just need to get that noted. So Councillor Bishop, Councillor Gleeson, Councillor Tolte, Councillor Hughes, Councillor Hewlett, Councillor Golay. And Councillor Williams. Those against? Councillor Boglari and Councillor Edwards. And Councillor, we're just voting on a perceived conflict of interest on 19.10, Councillor Elliott. Okay, well, we might just declare you absent in that vote and come back to the next part. So just declare Councillor Elliott is absent. So we now need another motion, Councillors, that that Councillor Mitchell may participate in the meeting in relation to the matter to which he has a perceived conflict. Moved Councillor Bishop, seconded Councillor Gleeson. Those in favour? So this allows him to stay and participate in the discussion. All right, so those in favour? Councillor Bishop, Councillor Gleeson, Councillor Tolte, Councillor Hughes, Councillor Elliott, Councillor Edwards, Councillor Golay, Councillor Boglari, Councillor Williams. Those against? Councillor Hewlett. So thank you, Councillors, which means that when that item does come for discussion that Councillor Mitchell can stay in the room. Sure.
Just my point of order relates to that item, and given that a declaration of a conflict was related, I wondered if Councillor Hewlett should be included in the count of the vote. Just a point of order and clarification on that. Because it's relating to that.
Yeah, no, it's a good point because I actually had that question going through my mind at the time.
So I thought I'd ask it.
We can maybe seek some advice and make sure the minutes reflect what we can and can't do. We're in training wheels still, councillors. Sorry about that. No, thank you, Councillor Bishop. I did have that question mark in my mind too. All right. With that, Councillor Gleeson, you have it.
Yeah, thanks, Mayor. I'd like to move item 19.8 out of confidential and into public forum, possibly as maybe item 15.1.
I'm not sure that you can actually do that vote here at this point. You have to have that when we move into closed session, Councillor. Because we haven't actually agreed to move into confidential at this point in time. So you'll have to wait till we get to that item in the agenda, the confidential items, before you can actually request that.
isn't this done under item 10 under motion to alter the order of business? I'm sure we've done that in the past. We don't go in confidential and then vote to take something out of confidential. We vote in a public forum to take something out of confidential. I'm sure.
Yeah, that's right. You don't do that now, though. You'll do it when you get to the confidential section of the agenda, Councillor.
Before we go into closed session?
Correct.
Or once we do?
Before you do. Otherwise, you can't have that noted.
Okay, thank you.
We're just asking now if you want to alter the order of business. So, and we haven't decided whether we go into confidential at this point in time. Okay, so moving straight on, is everyone clear on that? I've seen some... All good? Moving on to our items on the agenda, 12.1, our monthly financial reports. Do we have a mover and seconder? Move Councillor Edwards, seconder Councillor Hughes. Would you like to speak to it, Councillor Edwards?
This is where we get towards the pointy end of the year. We normally find at the beginning of the financial year things are all over the place. The results are looking rather good. I'll probably defer to our CFO shortly, but I'd just like to note a couple of things. That how things can move around the year, when particularly forecasting the future. I note with our operating surplus at the annual revised budget, we were looking at almost a $3 million deficit, and now we're tracking at a surplus of 16.2. And there's reasons for that that come around, and they will judge around. But that's the purpose why budgets are really a living document, and we review them regularly because things do change, and we don't have a crystal ball to pick exactly when contracts are going to be fulfilled and all sorts of things. But generally, it's really good to see the SEPSI asset sustainability ratio, which I don't believe we'll ever get a tick for that. Ticks right across the board, so it's well done. And I'll just invite CFO, anything to add?
CFO?
Thank you, Madam Mayor. Probably nothing too much further than Councillor Edwards, so thank you, Councillors, for the opportunity. The Councillors have noted 10 out of the 11 key performance indicators. The other thing that may be crossing your mind is the final budget review, so Councillor Edwards alluded to that. These are the April financials, so they're at the end of the 10th period, and they're before Council adopted its final budget review. So the senior officers and the executive leadership team reviewed performance as at the end of April, and it did put forward some proposals, but we noted at the time when Council adopted that budget review, it didn't change the operating position. The strong operating surplus is because Council levied the fourth quarter rates in April that was due for payment in May. So what we often say in finance is that the last 3 months of the year is really just money going out. So certainly May and June, money going out the door. So we do anticipate that $16 million surplus to reduce. High cash balance is $150 million, but we note that $109 million are in constrained cash reserves that we know Council's very interested in and we utilise as and when appropriate. So more than happy to take any questions, Madam Mayor.
Any questions, councillors? There being none, I'll put the motion. Those in favour? Those against? Motion's carried unanimously, and Councillor Hughes and Gleeson are absent. They've just left the room. Item 12.2, our management report for the QAO. Mover for that, move Councillor Bishop, seconded Councillor Edwards. Would you like to speak to it, Councillor Bishop?
Only to acknowledge the Queensland Audit Office Interim Management Report, which is an opportunity for the QAO to come down and spend some time with officers, and they're always very congratulatory of our officers, so it's just a kudos to Deb and the team. And yesterday I did ask a couple of... Well, actually, before I do that, I'll move the motion that we accept this. I'll move that first. Moved it? Okay, cool. So yesterday, a couple of points that were raised in the report, which is heartening to know are being actioned. I asked a question of clarification from Ms. Deborah Corbett-Hall, and I just think it would be worthwhile just getting an update because it seems that ELT are right across it as expected, but I just think it's worthwhile to get that update, if that's okay. Through you, Madam Mayor.
CFO.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. Through you, Chair. Thank you, Councillor. Yeah, it gives me great pride on behalf of ELT to table this item for your consideration. So we had the Queensland Audit Office do its interim audit in March. It came out for 2 weeks and there are no new deficiencies. So there's nothing new on this interim report. Councillor Bishop's referring to page 3 of the attachment about prior year issues. So, as one would expect, auditors do find things. We're a diverse organisation with many people that have responsibilities and accountabilities in the financial management and other systems. We take those action items, and through the great work that our internal audit group does, we monitor those on a monthly basis and we close those off. So one item that I was asked to talk to yesterday is the backdating of on maintenance. That process has been clarified within the business in the relevant area, and they now have work instructions and that's all clear. So that's a good move forward. And the outstanding ones are a constant opportunity for councils, not only at Redlands but across the whole of Australia, I imagine, to have timely clearance of work in progress. So when projects are closed out, we all celebrate that, but we know that there's a lot of paperwork, including financial paperwork, to finish off and take that to the account. So that remains a strong focus for both ELT, the senior leadership team, to work through that work in progress. So thank you for acknowledging on behalf of ELT the work that the organisation has done to get this very clean audit report.
Thank you. Any speakers against? Any other comments? I'll put the motion. Those in favour? Against? The motion is carried unanimously. Councillor Gleeson is absent. Next item is 12.3, making of local law number 2 and updating register of animals in public places. Can I have a mover and seconder for that? Move Councillor Tolte, seconder Councillor Edwards. Would you like to speak to it, Councillor Tolte?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I always speak to the animal regulations, as you know. But I'm happy to support this. It's an update of minor changes of wording and so on to keep up. And probably the main concern or point of interest for the community was there's an inclusion in this of a proposal to prevent dogs that are under investigation for declaration for being dangerous from entering into dog parks. So that means that during that period when someone has reported a dog as being dangerous following an incident, you know, elsewhere, the owner will not be allowed to take them into a dog park until that is concluded. And obviously if they're declared dangerous, they won't be able to do that either. But it just provides a little bit more safety. Our community loves our dog parks, and our dog park communities are very strong and social networks for both people and dogs. But doing all we can to protect all of the users, four-legged and two-legged, is essential. So this is a good change. Thank you.
Thanks, Councillor Tolte. Any speakers against? Any other comments? Being none, I put the motion. Those in favour? Against? Motion's carried unanimously. Councillor Gleeson. Item 13.1, our delegated authority decisions. Councillor, move Councillor Mitchell, seconded Councillor Edwards. Would you like to speak to it, Councillor Mitchell?
I'll just very briefly just to mention that while the many decisions are fairly straightforward and made under delegated authority, that they're not without oversight from councillors as we get alerts each week. So we do pay close attention. Thank you.
Any other speakers? Put the motion. Those in favour? Against? Carried unanimously. Councillor Gleeson's absent. 13.2, our planning court matters. Move Councillor Bishop, seconded Councillor Golay. Would you like to speak to it, Councillor Bishop?
Only to say that this is the delegated list of development and planning related court matters as at April 29, which also just brings into our focus item number 4, which I think is dealt with as a later item. Just acknowledging that. Thank you.
Thanks, Councillor Bishop. Any other comments? Put the motion. Those in favour? Against? Carried unanimously. Councillor Gleeson is absent. Item 13.3, and we have a material change of use. Move Councillor Tolte, seconded Councillor Elliott. Would you like to speak to it, Councillor Tolte?
Only to say that I'll put forward the officer's recommendation for consideration. This particular lot is sort of close to my heart, I guess, because my grandmother, when I was a child, lived over the road, and I played in this area between the road and the railway tracks. And I think that I'm unaware of the councillors any discussion that may have happened yesterday afternoon with regard to this, but I think that this reflects changes to the housing type that we are going to increasingly see in the Redlands and which is unusual for us up to this point. It is probably the modern equivalent of flats, or what we would have referred to in the old days in Brisbane as a block of flats. It's very modern design. It's designed for a particular resident, and there is a need for this housing type, but it will be for some a little bit confronting because it's not the kind of thing that we're used to. So I'll look forward to any discussion in relation to it. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Tolsey. Just before I continue, because there was some further information that was received and we wanted to note that, I might ask if Councillor Elliott, you'd potentially move an amendment to... I'll ask, because there's some further information that came to light in regards to the state referral. It's not significantly. No, I'll just ask for an amendment with that. Well, unless... Yes, I know. Yeah, you can move an amendment. Okay, well, someone else can... I understood that you could move an amendment, but Councillor Bishop, would you mind moving that amendment just so we can get that sorted and then we can have discussion?
Yes, Madam Mayor. Due to the fluid nature of information and appropriate updates that we receive from officers through emails since we discussed this item, I'd like to move the amendment, which has been, which is of no material change, as I understand it, to the proposed motion, but I'd like to move that.
So we're asking for an amendment being moved by Councillor Bishop. Can I have a seconder to that amendment? Thanks. Move seconder Councillor Edwards. As there's no, we just need to take that vote. Just do councillors require any further information on that before I put the motion on the amendment? Yes. Okay, I'll put the amendment motion, thanks. Those supporting the amendment to the motion, those in favour? Those against? Motion. We're not voting on the whole motion at this point in time, just on the amendment that allows this other information to be noted as part of the resolution today.
In the email it says it does change the development or the officer's recommendation, and there's a subsequent email. Because that's the bit I want to
check. I might just before I take the vote.
It does not.
David or Chris, would you just explain that? I think just to be that everyone's really clear in case they haven't read the email, and I do apologise, councillors. We'll just have it explained so that you're all very comfortable with the intent of the amendment.
The way it shows up on your phone, it goes underneath.
Dave, if you just quickly outline what the amendment is about.
As long as
Thank you, Madam Mayor. So at the time we drafted this report, we had a concurrence agency response from the state. Subsequent to that response and drafting of the report, the state issued a further amended response simply to reflect some amended plans, and they're the plans being considered by council. So my email to you contained a typo where I said it does change the development. In fact, it doesn't change the development. It's simply to note that there was an updated response.
Which you did correct.
I did, yep.
And that strengthens council's position ultimately if they're reflecting the proposal. So, all right, now I'm going to take a vote on the amendment, councillors. Those are in favour of the amendment. Those are against. It's carried unanimously. Okay, so now we have the amended motion in front of you. Councillor Bishop, would you like to speak to it?
I'll allow others who wish to speak. Given that we are informal, I will allow others to speak first, and if I may reserve the right to sum up.
Certainly. Speaker against, Councillor Bogwari.
Thank you, and I do appreciate being able to talk publicly on this one. I know it was questioned as to why I brought it up, when it is one that does comply with our planning scheme. But I really want to take this opportunity just to highlight the impacts that so-called wise planning and design elements do actually have on our residents when they're taken as a blanket approach across the state. So if you can bear with me, I've tried to make my points clear. Everyone is aware of the population predicted for South East Queensland, as Councillor Tolte mentioned before, and over the next 20 years we're going to have 30,000 homes in our areas. It is known in wise planning elements to use infill, which is going into existing suburbs and subdividing larger lots, etc., where possible, so we save our bushland and our environment being cleared for subdivision after subdivision. Plus, we also get to use with infill existing infrastructure, so it is very cost-effective development. And it is for these reasons that state government, no matter what colour, encourages high densities along our railway lines, and our planning schemes since approximately 2006 have also planned for infill in such areas as this along the railway lines for the higher density. And you can see the zoning on page 122 of today's report. The concern with infill, which is rapidly creeping across our suburbs that are near train stations, is the impact it actually has on our existing residents and the character of our suburbs. Part of our councillor's job is to take stock, analyse and reflect while listening and valuing our community needs, and that's why I wanted to take time today to pause and discuss these impacts, as our community does not have the knowledge of projected population growth, zonings, level of planning assessments and infrastructure, and we as their voice I think need to explain the application decisions. In a recent Urban Development Institute of Australia survey on consultation, they actually stated how they had found this from residents, and they were quite amazed that many residents are not aware of zoning of their areas or the importance of zoning and place little value on these matters until something happens in their area. And even the UDIA are actually increasing consultation with communities to bridge this gap. It is due to this need to explain and communicate with local residents that I called this proposal to Council today to give some transparency and accountability, because as many residents cannot understand why it would be approved. I wanted to highlight the impacts and essentially how it is planning, but in this case, I believe it should have been more holistically planned. The local residents in Harris Street will be impacted greatly by this development, as instead of one dwelling at the end of their cul-de-sac, there will now be 11 units on this lot. There will be a visual impact, a density impact, and a traffic impact. I would like to acknowledge the work our council planning officers have done on this proposal with myself and the community, as the original design, as Councillor Tolte said before, very much looked like a 1960s rectangular holiday block of flats. However, our officers have achieved a definite positive streetscape changes to the design of this building, and I thank them for that. On page 126 of the report, you can read five further conditions which are now being asked for to improve the functionality and appearance of the building. Presently, there are two units that have their front door actually opening into the car park. One of the changes our officers have asked for is for these two units to be combined and have some direct street access. The bin storage at present is not attracted to the streetscape, and it is also being conditioned that the bins are located at the rear of the car park, plus the long unbroken roof line on the southern side of the building, which can be seen from the railway line, is being conditioned to be amended again to improve the streetscape. These new conditions all address the visual impact on the existing streetscape by having improved outcomes, and I thank the officer for the meetings that they had with myself and how they listened to the community. And these are the sorts of changes with this actual application that could be achieved. The second impact I mentioned before was density, and I do believe this is a higher density under the new city plan than the previous plan, and with this density comes traffic. Traffic is now my main concern with this proposal, as Harris Street residents and myself often discuss the impact on their street with the ever-increasing traffic in the area due to their vicinity to the train station and the recent changes in train travel zones. More and more people are using Wellington Point Station instead of Ormiston and Cleveland, because it can actually be nearly a $1,000 difference if you travel from Wellington Point than the other two stations, and they have really noted the increase this has caused to traffic in their street. I mentioned before with wise planning concepts of higher density around transport hubs such as train stations, but I am frustrated as the state government is simply not supplying the necessary infrastructure to ensure the livability and functionality continue in these areas. I wrote to the state government suggesting they investigate this block for securing future car parking, as the block borders existing state government land which has not been formalised for car parking, and then the existing car park. It would be so easy to have had this entire area expanded into the necessary car park for this area. This street is every day, without an exception, a nightmare for travellers trying to get a car park and locals simply wishing to leave their homes. Even the day when I went out there with officers last year, an officer couldn't get their car out of their car park because of the travelling, the people who are commuting having parked so much across their driveway. My frustration is, once this block of units is built, the chance of ever having a larger, more common sense sized car park which is needed for this train station is lost forever, and I don't understand the wise planning element in that. My reason for bringing the application to Council today is to highlight to the State Government and to Council, and the community already know, that having higher density around train stations is a good theory in general, but not all train stations have the same level of infrastructure. So blanket comments and blanket planning isn't wise. You only have to compare South Brisbane Station to Wellington Point. I would like to see the existing residents in such areas being valued, impacts acknowledged, and the residents shown respect with wise planning and design to include a holistic approach to the individual areas and responsibility to ensure critical infrastructure is secured, not just the density outcomes being met. I understand that this proposed unit development will be approved as the application complies with planning schemes, as there is not sufficient planning grounds to refuse. But with this approval goes the chance of future-proofing the car park needed, and I can simply not understand or accept why the land isn't being used for this infrastructure to accommodate for the future high planned density of the area and the train station. We have to continue to lobby the state government for improved infrastructure and also look at our own planning scheme to ensure that we are actually using true wise planning elements with future impacts and the needs of our community being planned for also. And even today, when one of our speakers spoke, this is exactly what they were asking for as well, that Council and the State Government just pause and take a breath and look at the impacts that these planning is actually having on our community. And I'm going to steal that lady's quote by Ali Baldwin, I think she said, Alec Baldwin, that we can do better, and that's what I'm asking for. And I know that today is just a chance to highlight yet again impacts that happened, and I do understand that it will be approved.
Thank you, Councillor Bolgari. Councillor Gleeson, Speaker 4.
Thanks, Mayor. Wholeheartedly support it. I think it's fantastic. We definitely need more one-bedroom units in the city. There's definitely a call for it. Our community, I've spoken with developers in the past and to try and encourage one-bedroom units in Capella Bay. We've got a lot of ageing populations where couples may have lost, some may have lost a partner and they're elderly and living on their own. They simply can't afford to rent or buy four-bedroom houses. Not everyone can do that. The timing's unbelievable. On the weekend, I happened to catch up with some friends who had a friend of theirs up from Casino this weekend. She's a 54-year-old woman, single. Her kids have grown up and moved out. And she can't afford a... She works. She's got a full-time job. She can't afford to rent a house in Casino. She's had to revert to... She's bought a caravan, and she's living in the back of her son's house, behind his house. Now, that's one step from homelessness. And this is what happens when we don't provide alternative living arrangements for our community. Wholeheartedly support it. I think it's perfect to go right next to a train station. I have concerns. I think there's only 10 car parks. I really sincerely hope that they are single let out or rented or sold to single people, and we don't start seeing two cars per unit. But the concept of one-bedroom units next to a train station has got to be supported.
Speaker against? Councillor Hughes?
Thank you, Mayor, and I appreciate Councillor Boglari's very in-depth and thoughtful words. I too share her concerns. I absolutely feel for residents that are impacted heavily by these developments. I understand what Councillor Gleeson has said about the need for one-bedroom apartments and the lower financial impacts that some residents have with rental and home purchase. Clearly understand that. However, when we are looking at where these units go, the impact knock-on effect of the parking of the train stations, there is just not enough parking. So I support Councillor Boglari in what she said, and exceedingly well done in your explanation. Thank you, Councillor Boglari.
Speaker 4, Councillor Edwards. Oh, comment? Oh, well, I'll come back to comment. Speaker 4, Councillor Mitchell.
Yes, I'll be speaking for, because on planning matters, that's exactly where this fits firmly and squarely in the in legal on planning matters, and I think the discussion already highlights the challenges that we have. This isn't black and white; it's grey and various shades of, and this is the challenges. You don't sit in these chairs if you're shrinking violet on these matters. You have to stare these things in the eye and ultimately make a decision. I'd absolutely like to, while I'll be speaking for this, acknowledge those local community impacts. They're right. This is my, and Councillor Tolte mentioned it. She grew up playing in that paddock. Things change. So this is not what the locals grew up with. But this isn't 10 years ago when Councillor Tolte was a child. things have moved forward. And as Council, we do have to acknowledge that we do manage these matters on behalf of state guidelines and the reality of population growth. I'd also like to acknowledge that there is a need for diverse housing choice. We're not all two families, two kids anymore. It's any flavour and colour in between. So there is an obligation on us to provide that, whether, and this is probably a good place to do it. Having said that, a personal comment, how this application first started was pretty boring and dull and ugly and vanilla in my personal opinion. It's got a lot better thanks to the officers, so thank you so much for the achievements on what we have there. But on planning matters, as I said, it does tick the boxes. It's close to schools, trains, the bus, villages, the village centre, you can walk and cycle around. So on all that, yep, you can make a great case for it, and that's what it is. I think while we're working in the grey and we're all torn on these things, on what is the legal obligations versus what we'd love to be able to do if there was a lever, the mismatch between what we're asked to do by the state and the infrastructure spend to improve that livability for our community and back up their own requirements is a gulf. That's been recognised in the community. It's been recognised in this council. How we get there is all of us together advocating in the right direction. So don't bag those that can't change it. Get behind it, all of us, and let's advocate for those changes. So, thank you.
Comment? Speaker against? Okay, got comment from Councillor Edwards and a question from Councillor Gollard.
Thank you. When I first looked at this on page 149, the floor plan, I looked at it and I think, gee, that's a nice motel. They give you a bit of room for a couple of days. You know, I see nothing wrong with it. But what really concerns me is that the small amount of living room which is expected to cater for dining and kitchen and all those sorts of things, that to me is poor designing. And also the fact that people have to go through an open bedroom in most of these. You just open you straight in the first bedroom. It's a shocker. We've got, for the size of these units, we've got a policy in place where on the islands, if 60 square metres or less, a resident has to pass an aesthetics test. And we've got about 11 of these in one go. But look, I do acknowledge we do have a need to cater for those people who can't get into housing, and we've got to acknowledge that. I would like to see perhaps, and I don't know how this would be done, I would rather have seen a relaxation on the size of the balconies to make that room larger and more functional, because people spend most of their time inside, and perhaps have the whole design flipped around where they didn't have to go through a bedroom or something like that. So yes, we do need low cost housing for people. I think the design elements need to be looked at, and that might mean that to get a livable outcome for people actually living in those units that plan to buy them, maybe we need to put some of our requirements, our planning requirements, set them aside and relook at that. I'd be happy to stay there as a motel, but I couldn't see myself living there on a full-time basis.
Question, Councillor Golay.
Thanks, Madam Chair. So my question relates to the infrastructure charges. Will they be allocated to be spent, so to speak, on that site? So there's no way of actually... I'm just seeking clarity on that. And then my second question is, so there's been 10 car parks allocated to 12 units, but we know in reality what's happening out there on the street is that the average dwelling ends up having 2 cars per dwelling. So essentially we're going to have 24 vehicles at this site with 10 car parks, and everyone's going to be fighting to try and get a park on the street, which will ultimately impact the other residents next door. I sort of still am trying to come to grips as to why we just accept an application knowing that there's going to be social impacts and not actually ask the designer or the applicant to knock it down to, say, 6 units.
Councillors,
or 8 units.
We have to abide by Planning Act. Planning Act doesn't allow us to have those types of negotiations, which is...
So we can't dictate...
No.
Through conditions.
Short answer is no. But I'll get the officer to respond. I mean, you would have seen plenty of applications come through here that...
But I'm sort of looking at this, Madam Chair. There is a push for yield over social livability. And as Councillor Edwards said, even the relaxation of, you know, doing away with the balcony so that you actually had more living space. The whole design just...
We don't have influence over that, Councillor.
Wow.
The internal design, we don't.
So what about the fact that there's only 10 car parks for
12 units?
I'll
let the officer respond. Sorry, David, just if you wouldn't mind responding to infrastructure charges.
Sure.
And the negotiations that we can and can't enter into.
So councillors will be aware that you recently adopted a local government infrastructure plan. That infrastructure plan is a 10-year infrastructure plan to pay for trunk infrastructure across the city associated with additional growth. That infrastructure plan is funded by infrastructure charges on development. So when a development is approved and we levy charges on that development, it's not allocated to infrastructure associated solely with that development. It goes towards paying for the infrastructure plan for the whole of the city. So the second question around car parking. So for this particular development, the applicant has provided car parking in accordance with the acceptable outcome. So council, in its planning scheme, notes car parking rates and establishes that if you comply with those rates, you comply with the planning scheme. Those rates themselves were derived from a study that council undertook in developing its city plan, which is based upon evidence associated with development across the city over a number of years. So it is evidence-based, based upon parking needs, and the applicant in this particular case has provided the car parking in accordance with those rates.
Yeah, I understand that, David, but the maths doesn't add up. 10 car parks, 12 units, how is it actually, I mean...
Councillor, we did have this discussion through our city planning processes and its location.
We may have to review the planning scheme again then.
Councillors, can I please... Councillors, we're in... We are in formal debate here, so I have had a speaker comment and a question. I've got Councillor Hewlett. Councillor Elliott, did you want to make a comment as well? Was that your hand or you're just stretching? Councillor Hewlett.
Yes, thank you, Madam Mayor. I think
I think all councillors were in the room during the planning team discussions when it was decided that we'd go for design over density in the medium density space. And the officers have achieved what I think is a great outcome. The design looks good from the street. I think I was talking to you recently about my visit to Miniippi Gardens up at Carina recently, where there's 40 multiple dwellings in that estate mixed with a residential. Those multiple dwelling units up there are over $1 million each. And they're not massive units, but that's obviously what the developer sees needed in that community at Carina. So I think we're all in the room, we've discussed this. The developer has delivered what is expected in that zone. I think it's incumbent on people that move into the area, if they're concerned about development, that they should look at the zoning in the area. The zoning in Victoria Point that I'm really not happy with, but I inherited it from years ago, and it's been in place for years. And as you see these old houses go, you're going to see a higher density development. A lot of people don't like it. Some of it isn't appropriately aesthetic, but it's what we've got to live with. And I think the multiple design, multiple dwelling design zone will help alleviate some of the stress and the angst moving forward. Thank you.
Councillor Elliott.
Yeah, look, this is where you build these types of things next to train stations. And yep, the whole market's changed. There's huge demand for one-bedroom units, and there's twos and threes and things like that. But certainly if this block was just two blocks of land, 20 metres by 20 metres, I guarantee I can have two Dixon houses there, double storey, five bedrooms. So with the kids and everything and all the boats and caravans and which one, you know, you're going to get the same outcome. And I've got, in Alexander Hills, you know, people have four bedroom houses and the boats parked on the footpath, parked on the road. You know, that's as long as it's legal. So be careful what you wish for. If this were just an urban res block, two big houses could be on there and you'd have the same result. So I think this is great. Medium density is where you build it. This is where you build it. Right next to train stations, right near shopping centres and things like that. And if you don't build it, or you do not use these sites to their potential, all the triggers is further urban sprawl, less buses, anything. It's all an excuse. So this is the best place to have these. And as far as the veranda on the back, well, it's a railway line. You don't want to be out there. Yeah, it's purely, I remember quite rightly, the old six packs in Cooperoo that Jim Sawley did, they're great, they're huge units, they get retrofitted, they're worth a fortune. That's good.
Firstly, I think we wanted to have discussed, and that is that there was an existing approval on this site for three by three. So I might just get the officers to explain that for councillors as to, I mean, that was an application that was made earlier, arguably wasn't making the best use of the land available to them. So I might just get the officers to explain that you can make a new application despite the fact you have an approval for an existing use.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. That's absolutely right. So a landowner, an applicant, can apply as many times as they wish for as many development types as they wish. We had a previous application for a three-unit development, three by three-bedroom unit. That was assessed under the previous scheme. It was approved because it complied with the scheme. Now, that's not to suggest that an application couldn't have been made under the previous scheme for more units, and it still would likely have been approved. But certainly you can have any number of applications, any number of approvals over a development site.
And also, David, if you wouldn't mind, I just hear a bit of conjecture around the room about the number of car parks. Can you just clarify that, please?
So it will be 13 car parks that are provided, and due to the conditions that are being recommended, the number of units will be reduced to 11.
Just to 11 units and 13...
13 spaces.
So two extra spaces. Councillor Bishop.
That's actually slightly different to what the report suggests. Forgive me, it does suggest on page 127 that there are 12 units and there will be...
that's their application. That's your application, I think, isn't it? And then it's been conditioned.
Thank you. Yes, cool. Thank you.
So we're actually reducing the impact according to their application by the number of units. Just quickly, Councillor Boglary.
I thank you for giving the chance for some clarity. What I am saying is nothing about that we don't need to have affordable housing. We made that clear. it's like Councillor Hughes, at least one of you understood me, it's about location. And yes, as Councillor Elliott and that said, this is the place to have such units is around train stations. And, you know, if it was across the road, my argument wouldn't be there. My argument is, if we are going to get people to use train stations, they have to have a functionality about them. And this particular block neighbours the existing car park. So it would be the common sense to, yes, put an extension of the car park there, because the amount of traffic in this street already is, it's full. The car park's full, the streets are full. I've had a phone call on 2 o'clock last year in the afternoon on a Saturday asking, a resident asking me to take them to a wedding because they've gone out and the whole, must have been a football match or something on in town, and the whole street is parked. They couldn't get out. And I said, just drive down the footpath until you can get down someone else's driveway.
Okay.
You know, it is the location of this particular block and how the state government is not supplying the infrastructure for future use being made livable for residents nearby and functionality of those areas. We have to have an improvement around our infrastructure. That is my point I'm trying to make, and I really think we're all on the same page there, that we have to continue lobbying and look at these planning elements.
Thank you,
because they can't be blanket for every train station.
Councillor Salt, you have a comment?
Comment, question, Madam Mayor. And I completely agree with what Councillor Boglar is saying. We do always lobby for more parking around our transport nodes. We are aware that that's not a policy of the state government, but perhaps you could just ask an officer to explain the level of control that we have over that, because listening to the arguments that are here today, a member of the community might think that we had some control over whether that became parking or units. And so I'd like that explained too.
David?
Thank you, Madam Mayor. So this block of land is owned by a private party. It's zoned medium density residential, has been for a number of years. So council's role is to assess an application that comes before it in accordance with the planning scheme. Separate to that, if council has a view that the land could be better used for another purpose by the state government, then council could, if it so chooses, advocate on that particular matter. But it would be a separate matter, because you couldn't really consider that in the assessment of the application, which is limited to the planning scheme and the assessment benchmark. So it's a separate matter.
Thank you. I think we've had quite a natter. If I could just add to that before I hand back to Councillor Bishop to sum up, that I have been in front of the Minister in regards to park and rides across this city, both Cleveland, Wellington Point, Birkdale, Thornside, and, you know, their policy is Victoria. Their policy doesn't subscribe to building more car parks. It actually subscribes to multimodal travel. And I think, Councillor Boglari is correct. I think you can't. It's not. It's horses for courses. And different parts of the region have better access to frequent bus trips and train trips, etc. So we continue to lobby for better public transport infrastructure, which remains the responsibility of the state government, despite every now and then they try to flick it over to us. But I also just wanted to add to it that diversity of housing in the city is really important with an ageing population. What we don't want to see is people who are forced through no fault of their own to move to other parts of the country when their support networks are here simply because they can't afford to live here. And later on in the agenda we talk about homelessness. And a lot of factors that actually contribute to that. Yes, the design isn't ideal, but it's way more ideal than sleeping on a cardboard box and sleeping bag somewhere in the city. And as was also mentioned, I think, Councillor Gleeson, that, there are various stages to get to that point. Certainly we don't wish that for any of our residents, particularly our elderly residents here in the city. So, yep, it's a tension that we live with when it comes to infrastructure versus growth. It's a tension that we live with, design versus outcomes. I do want to also congratulate the officers because the fact is about 9 months ago we wouldn't have been able to achieve an improved amenity of this development. Through the design guidelines that we've created, we have actually improved the outlook for people who will have to pass by this building or live in this building. And you know that that was a subject of great discussion in regards to townhouse developments and whatnot in the south of the city. We have addressed those concerns as best we can under the legislation, and I wanted to congratulate the officers for being able to negotiate a better outcome, both being a reduced number of units and also a better amenity to the outlook for this particular development. Councillor Bishop, would you like to sum up?
Yes, Madam Mayor. By way of doing that sum up, can I ask one question of the officers through you? We've discussed this as affordable housing and mentioned those who are destitute and homeless. I'd just like to ask if I could, if anyone, maybe the officers, have some understanding about where this might likely sit in terms of how much it would go to the general market for, based on the current market. So a one-bedroom unit in Wellington
Point. I don't think that's like a question that the officers could answer, Councillor Bishop. The market will determine that.
The point there in discussing diversity is, if this is the most cost-effective affordable housing that the market is likely to yield, I would suggest that it will be north of $350,000 for entry into such a thing, and in a place like Wellington Point, probably in excess of that. So
it's also next to a train station, Councillor, so I don't think we can be judge and jury of that. The market will determine that.
No, I'm not going to be judge and jury, and I appreciate the fact that we can't get a definitive answer, but I just think it's worth our while understanding where this sits in framing up our discussion, because we, the city decision makers, create the laws and the framework, and I do actually suggest that we do have the ability to influence our local plan. And I want to thank Councillor Boglari for bringing this item, which otherwise could have been delegated to officers for reasons that we've discussed, because it identifies some of the challenges that we do face in the city, and it highlights specifically the need for. Yesterday we had a presentation from the Urban Development Industry Association, who actually spoke so refreshingly about the need for community consultation, particularly to do with density, particularly to do with zonings, and particularly to do with the impact, and specifically to do with the extra heavy lifting that developers need to do in terms of making sure that their developments are approved of. And as council decision makers who are in charge of the city plan, this item has identified some specific challenges that we face, and I want to thank Councillor Boglari for raising that. Specifically, as the Mayor, you mentioned, the subtropical design guideline that has been developed by officers has created some great benefits. Also acknowledging that we are not the landowners, so we don't get to stipulate where car parks should go, and we can't tell the state government how they should manage land that they don't own. I do think that one of the important things, as you've mentioned also, Madam Mayor, is around our transport nodes, particularly the train network in the northern part of the city. As you suggested, the state park and ride policy does not subscribe to increasing their allocation of parking around those areas. So I suspect that one of the areas that we do have a great responsibility to influence and a need for our community is to identify, well, what is fit for Redland City's purpose? Because if statewide they don't want to have a policy that's going to address that issue, what is our pushback to them to say, in our area, we know that there's much more car use in our area. So how are we going to have that conversation with our community going forward? Councillor Gleeson mentioned the one-bedroom apartments, and I think that that's where the discussion about homelessness versus affordability comes in. Councillor Mitchell mentioned the diversity and need for an articulated response. So if it's all just one-bedroom units, then that's maybe not as much diversity as possible. So that's again where we as a city need to encourage the market for those developers who do want to provide solutions to encourage the way that they can actually encourage that in local areas. I also am of the view that it is appropriate in this area that we do have this scale of development.
And I think what it brings up is the need for people who live in this area will need to commune with other people, otherwise they will face social isolation. And they will do that in the public space, they will do that in the outdoor space, and I wish there were more opportunities for them to convene in the on that local site, but they're going to have to do that elsewhere. Absolutely happy to move this and welcome the robust discussion, and I'd like that discussion to be able to continue out in the community as we design feedback loops that can keep us making sure that we are designing the city in a way that is fit with the community's expectations and also the state requirements. Thank you.
Thank you, councillors. I haven't put the motion yet. I put the motion. Councillors, those in favour? Those against? Our motion's carried. Those in favour? Councillor Mitchell, Councillor Golay, Councillor Hewlett, Edwards, Elliott, Tolte, Gleeson, Bishop, Williams, those against, Councillor Boglari, Councillor Hughes. Thank you, councillors. The next item, councillor, I believe there may be an alternate motion for item 13.4.
Thank you,
Councillor Hughes.
Mayor. Yes, I have sent the alternate motion through. Thank you. I have emailed my colleagues.
So you're moving that motion in front of you, councillor motion?
That is...
Alternate motion, councillor motion.
That's council resolve to request a fire. So, thank you very much.
Seconded, Councillor Boglari. Would you like to speak to it, Councillor Hughes?
Again, thank you, Mayor. Yes, I would like to speak to it. This application before us and the officer's recommendation to reclassify these blocks of land down to an area of koala habitat value that are currently zoned bushland habitat area would result in these 13 non-juvenile koala habitat trees being removed without offset and without regard. So with this amendment, we're looking at changing the value from high value bushland habitat to high value rehabilitation habitat. And under the rehabilitation habitat area, that will enable the owners of the property to develop the area, but to try to avoid clearing the non-juvenile habitat trees, with these koala trees. And if clearing of these koala trees cannot be avoided, the amount of clearing is minimised and offset in accordance with the policy that we've got under the regulations there. Thank you.
Speaker against? No speakers against? Any question, Councillor Tolte?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'd just like to understand from the officers, I assume that the reports that were provided in support of the application have supported the Good. Thanks for that. I always need to know what the weather is. So do the reports support this classification, or do the reports support the classification applied for, please?
This is an amendment. I think if you read the officer's recommendation, it is actually suggesting a different value of bushland.
I'd like them to explain that, please.
Okay. David, do you want to explain this?
Sure. Thank you, Madam Mayor. So, councillors, if you turn to page 251 in the report, the last line, that gives us the definition from the planning regulation of a koala habitat, an area of koala habitat value. And that's defined as being land on a lot less than 0.5 of a hectare, contains native vegetation, forested areas, scattered trees, areas of grass and bare surfaces, contains trees that koalas typically use for food or shelter, allows for the movement and dispersal of koalas, and allows for genetic exchange. Now, the key element of that definition is being on a land less than 0.5 of a hectare. So the reports provided by the applicant in support of their request and the officer's assessment is, in terms of the best fit definition, it would be an area of koala habitat value. Council, though, may choose to take a different view, and the motion by Councillor Hughes is that the definition of rehabilitation habitat is considered more appropriate. But the assessment from officers and the applicant's report is that an area of koala habitat value is affected.
Any other speakers? Councillor Pogaro?
I just support Councillor Hughes's change here to the motion, and I thank her for the discussion that we had yesterday, because I did have questions myself. Recently we did that huge survey across the city about branding, and it was Redlands Coast. Well, it didn't finish there. It went Redlands Coast, comma, naturally wonderful, and the branding people actually said to us that we have to think of that naturally wonderful throughout all decisions we make in council. And this is where we apply that, because the values our community set at that time were all about our environment and how much they love living here with our bay and our bushland and our bushland in our rural areas. So it's not just all about saving food trees for koalas and everything. It is also about the mental stress and, you know, the heat of suburbs and everything with our trees. And so by doing this, we can actually get a better community outcome by having offsets, etc. So I think any little bit we can, we have to actually walk the talk, and I totally support the change that Councillor Hughes is putting up.
Any other comments, Councillor Elliott? Oh, no? Any other comments? All right. Handing back to you, Councillor Hughes, to sum up.
Thank you, Mayor, and in changing the habitat to high value rehabilitation habitat with an application of 1 into 8, the way the numbers are at the end of the day, this will be a 1 into 8 development, and that will ensure that when the developers are looking to build on these properties, that they do take into consideration and do try wherever possible to save at least some of these trees with this zoning, high value rehabilitation habitat, and that is what I'm putting forward to you, my colleagues, today. Thank you.
Those in favour? Those against? Carried unanimously. Thanks, councillors. Item 13.5, I'll ask Councillor Hewlett to take the chair. And I've declared an MPI on this item.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. Could I please have a mover for item 13.5? Move Councillor Elliott, seconded Councillor Bishop.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. 13.5, 2019-2022, Healthy Land and Water Network Member Agreement. This is a straightforward document, Mr. Chairman. I'm happy to move it.
Thank you, Councillor Elliott. Any speakers against? Councillor Gleeson. Any speakers at all? I've just looked at it again, so no one's speaking against, so you want to speak for it, Councillor Pogaro?
No. I'd definitely like to speak for it, thank you.
Thank you.
I think this is one of our most valued networks that we can possibly have. When the Mayor goes along, she gets to talk to the other mayors in South East Queensland, because many people mightn't realise what happens up in the Lockyer and Ipswich area with the waterways affects us down here and our rating. We're sort of like at the end of the line, and after any flood event you can actually see that dark plume coming out into our bay. So it's not just making sure that we do the right thing here with development and soil erosion and everything else, but it's also a network that people work together. So we might even put some money into rehabilitating a stream out of our area, because it will affect our actual environment. And I just mentioned, you know, Redlands Coast, naturally wonderful, and I think just about every fifth person in Redlands has something to do with the waterway in some way. And so keeping them clean to the most pristine level that we can is vital, and I have actually gone to some of these meetings, and it is invaluable what comes out of them. So I fully support endorsing this and keeping going with it.
Thank you, Councillor Pogaro. Councillor Hughes, you have something to say?
Thank you, Deputy Mayor. Recently I've been attending some LGAQ training, and I've seemed to have inadvertently buddied up with a councillor from Lockyer Valley. And in the discussions while we've been at the training courses, the value of working together in our South East Queensland regions, and he actually sent a thank you to our council for supporting the works that we do. And I spoke passionately for the support that council here, Redland City Council, is giving these programs. These amounts are very reasonable, and with our smaller amounts coming together as a consolidated group of South East Queensland councils working collaboratively and supporting each other, there's nothing more valuable than our waterways, absolutely nothing. So I just commend this and support. Thank you.
Councillor Bishop.
Yeah, just briefly speaking in support, but also speaking in relation to the whole regional collaboration, which is critical, because we know that what happens upstream does flow down. Effectively, all the upland farming soil that gets tilled and then washed downstream becomes future real estate in Redland City, because it's going to become siltified, and everything upstream ends up coming downstream. And as I heard one of the Indigenous artists, actually Craig Tapp, speak about on North Stradbroke Island, he does a lot of environmental awareness raising, and he says what we do to the land, we do to the sea, and what we do as a region, especially around collaboration and finding ways to work together to look at the whole system, is critical. So the feedback loops among these partners working together is critical, and this is the one entity that we have looking at all of that. So may there be healthy land and water, and may the principles of ecological sustainability determine how they design. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Bishop. Back to you, Councillor Elliott, to sum up.
I think all has been said.
Moving motion. Those in favour? Carried unanimously. Thank you, councillors.
Councillors, next item is 13.6, move Councillor Edwards, Mackay Island Progress Association Community Library. Seconded Councillor Poglari. Would you like to speak to it, Councillor Edwards?
Just briefly, thank you. The Mackay Island Progress Association is a community library. It's been an ongoing arrangement for many, many years where Council has contributed nominal funding to help that continue. They work in partnership with the Council's library services, and they provide a well-used service for Mackay Island, Lamb Island and Karagara. We do have a council-owned library at Russell Island, which is probably running at capacity already. This funding agreement enables the continuation of this library service for far less cost than what council could provide it if we were to do it ourselves.
Speaker against? No speakers? Is it a comment, Councillor Bogwell?
I totally agree with Councillor Edwards' comments, and when you go to a library and you see the community value that they give, I can only imagine that $13,000 is minimal compared to the value you'd put on to the value it gives your community. But the new library bus, I believe, is a size which I know, Councillor Elliott, it's a little pet thing of mine. It's been going on for years, so I am going to give it a plug. The new size of the library bus can also go over and visit your islands now. So that's another service that Council will be supplying over there, which I think is an advantage to the size of the bus. Thank you.
Any other comments, councillors? If not, I put the motion. Those in favour? Those against? It's carried unanimously. Item 13.7, councillors, the homelessness policy. Move Councillor Bishop. Seconded Councillor Hughes. Would you like to speak to it, Councillor Bishop?
Yes, Madam Mayor. Briefly, a couple of questions to officers through you, if I may. Having moved the motion, if we may ask a couple of questions of officers. Yeah, I'll speak to it, and in the process of doing so, just ask for some clarification through you to the officers. In this report, which is very welcome because we need to have as much clarity around this issue as possible, The background of this report suggests that homelessness is an issue that impacts all communities on page 275. And then on page 276, under issues, the role of council, it says that the role of council in responding to homelessness is not well understood, which is exactly why we need to have a policy. My question to officers is, in the formalisation of this policy, can we and should we go further in terms of the breadth and scope of designing this policy so we can have clarity about the matters relating to what's referred to in this report as the causes of homelessness are varied and complex, and homelessness is often accompanied by other issues including poverty, drug and alcohol addictions, mental health issues and disabilities, as well as lack of social support, which are not easy to resolve quickly. I would add that there's also matters of economic isolation, and we've spoken about the gap between those who can afford affordable housing, starting above $350,000, and there's a massive gap to ending up on the street. And I think we need to identify economic isolation as an issue, and also acknowledge that domestic violence and matters relating to stresses, relating to economics and also challenges between couples or partners or families, also relates to homelessness and the need for people to find solutions. And our job as a council should be to design a policy that looks with breadth and scope at all of those issues. And I wonder, my question to officers, if I may, is can this policy and should it go further? And also noting that there is extra work being done and already in train, I'm just asking, as we review this policy, could we, should we go further and reference some other examples of places where they are getting their policy more holistic and robust? That's my question first.
Frank, is that you or James? Would you like to just come forward, Frank? Welcome back. Baptism of fire in your first month back.
Thank you, Councillor, for the question. And as you rightly acknowledge, homelessness is a particularly complex issue. What we've tried to do through the policy is to get a broad statement of how Council will respond. And as you rightly acknowledge, it's at a broad level. And so the intention has always been to encapsulate more of the detail in other documents, as like the guidelines, and it just allows us the freedom to change that as we need to, probably more easily than a policy position, but it's deliberately broad, and the details that we picked up through both on the ground operational work that we do, but also through guidelines in that space. So yeah, so we, I mean, the policy could be longer, but at this point in time, typically we're trying to keep our policies at a relatively high level and not include operational detail in the policy, which is more suitable to be put into the guidelines.
Thank you. The reason I'm asking for extra clarity is because under that role of council, it says that responding to homelessness is not well understood. A clear policy position is intended to resolve the tension between the need for compassionate response to those who are most vulnerable and the needs of the general community to feel safe when accessing and using public spaces. We know that in this city there is a tension, and there have been recent instances where the tension of how people in the community feel about homelessness and homeless people has rippled, and I believe that it's really important that we are clear about the status of primary, secondary, tertiary homelessness, rough sleeping. We should frame up the issue of homelessness as part of our policy, as other cities do, and there's a lot of information, and I know the officers are aware of this. The reason I suggest that this should be in our policy is council is not the only solution, and in fact, in many instances, it's other entities that are the solution, and state governments and other levels of other departments. But it's important that council gets very clear about what the issue is as understood in Redland City, because there are other people who would maybe create support agencies
that would need to get funding. And if we don't have clarity about what's happening on the ground in this city, how can they say there is a stated known issue in Redland City and here's the proof because we've got a policy that identifies it? That's where I'd like us to have more clarity going forward, but really happy to see this policy. Is there any further response?
Well, I'd like to just contribute to that because I have been having discussions with both the Minister for Communities and the Minister for Housing in that space, and as you've already rightly acknowledged, there is a whole of government approach to this, and council just tends to be the facilitator and the identifier, and that work is actually basically in train trying to get that baseline to understand what those issues are. This policy gives us that broad option as things change, and they do, to make sure that we don't have to keep coming back to council to identify what our role is, but we can actually be agile in dealing with those different situations, such as the most recent tent city, and it also sends a message to those other levels of government who think they've got all the answers, that there is a coordinated response that should involve all the various support services, as well as, you know, making sure that those other levels of government understand what their role is. So we are, as fortunate or unfortunate as it might sound, we are the people closest to the ground, and we hear these things and tend to have to react and pull those agencies together. So this doesn't prevent any of what you're saying happening. In fact, it enables it to happen, and we haven't had this, which was part of, I guess, the tension that we experienced when it became a bit of a political hot topic a number of months ago. I feel very confident in my discussions with the Minister that we will work collaboratively. In fact, I've asked the members of his team to sit with us to start working a lot like other models such as Together Logan, and at this point in time there's been a very positive response to that. So I think we're well and truly heading in the right direction. This policy just gives the imprimatur, the head of power for this organisation to do that. So I'm very comfortable with that, but I think you can feel comforted, Councillor Bishop, that everything you're asking for, in a sense, is actually occurring in the absence of a policy. With the policy, it actually gives us greater strength to go to those various levels of government, as I have, with this to back us up.
So I acknowledge that at this point, in terms of what I see, it's just the policy that's in front of us. And the definition, a definition of a policy is a definite course or method of action selected from among alternatives in light of given conditions to guide and determine present and future decisions. Now, I think there's two parts that I think is really important about this, and I need to acknowledge that I, in my family, have experience of homelessness and understand that it is a really important issue, and we as council need to be very compassionate and understanding about those who are going through, either in a peak moment of crisis or a long-sustained issue. We need to be very clear, not just to ourselves internally and how we talk amongst officers with the community, but how the community talks to each other about this city. And that's the stuff that I appreciate is in the background. I can't see it in this policy, and I would like to make sure that it was up front and centre in our minds so that it is not interpreted that this is, you know, could be seen by some as a light version that's trying to keep the public space gentrified. And I know that's not the intent behind the scenes, but when I look at this without seeing further understanding about the compassionate need for it, I think that's a concern, and I'd like to see that stuff reflected in the policy itself.
If I could just refer you to page 279 and the first point of the policy, which says, undertaking a compassionate and balanced approach to public space management and upholding the needs of all members of the community to enjoy the use of public space and to feel safe. So there is that approach of compassion that's required to manage that, as we demonstrated. I think we've demonstrated very well. I'd like to thank the officers in that space, despite the political tension around that, for what they did in keeping people safe and also in contact with the required services for those people not to remain homeless.
And so I think my point there is the policy should define the compassionate and balanced approach.
I think what the office is saying is the guidelines allow us to, the guidelines we develop allow us to do exactly that. Councillor Hughes, and then I guess I'm just taking comments. Is anyone going to speak against this today? Okay. Councillor Hughes?
Was that official? Did you just ask for the motion to be... Sorry, I just wanted to check. Thank you. Thank you, Mayor, and thank you, Councillor Bishop. And personally, the policy, I was really keen to see it come along. And in the report, I'm just backing up what Councillor Bishop has said. In the report, we start with mentioning three times clear policy position, and then we talk about broad policy level. There just was a gap there for me as well, reading the report and the policy. That clear policy position is our compassion and our balanced approach, and I think that I really respect that we've had the conversation to articulate that to our community, because on first read it really was a little bit of a gap there. What really interests me as well as supplementary to this policy is we've mentioned now guidelines that may follow. So I'd like to have a little bit more detail on we are working on guidelines now to follow. So thank you, Frank. I'd be interested in that, to share that with my community as well. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor. So yes, we almost have a complete set of guidelines that back up and include all the definitions that Councillor Bishop talked about and how we go about doing those business. And it's at Council's pleasure whether they wish to view those guidelines before they're adopted.
What sort of timeline are we talking here? Thanks, Frank.
They're almost completed, I think.
Yes, we're almost completed with those.
That could be fairly quickly. Guidelines don't have to come back to Council, as I understand it. So just so you're aware, just to be clear, our document hierarchy is pretty well structured. You have policy up here, which Council adopts and allows the organisation to go away and develop the guidelines to suit that policy in a situation. So they don't often come back to Council, but I'm sure that the communities team will be happy to pass them around and get feedback from councillors in regards to those guidelines. Councillor Tolte, I think you were next.
Just a comment, Madam Mayor, if I can. I think this just simply puts into a policy the approach that the officers have taken for a long time. I've had many instances over the last few years where I've had complaints from residents, particularly those who have very valuable assets in their waterfront homes, unhappy about people who might be in waterfront parks, or you know, families that find themselves camping out of cars and things like that. And the approach of the officers has always been exemplary. They've always handled it very sensitively. They have been very understanding to both sides of the argument and all of the people involved in the concerns. And I have never had one of these situations that has not been resolved to the benefit of the people that are finding themselves in difficulty. So I think it's good that we've put it down on paper so people can see it, but this is what our officers have been doing for a really long time, and they're very, very good at it. And they have great connections within the social services and support network communities. They know who's working in which areas. They have the direct phone numbers for a lot of those people, and they work very well and very closely and collaboratively, and I think it's all good. Thank you.
Councillor Edwards.
Thank you. Homelessness is really a worldwide problem, regardless of how wealthy a country is. And people find their ways into homelessness through all sorts of varied situations. And it takes my mind back to some time ago, 30 years ago, my wife and I were working in the area of youth homelessness, and we found that the greatest successes we had was when we achieved an early intervention and support and provided direction for them. But so long as particularly youth, they're in a homeless situation, they're vulnerable to all sorts of other things that might occur to them. And having a proactive policy to provide the direction of who can support them, I think is going to impact on many people's lives. And I'd also just like to mention my thanks to the CEO in this matter, is that when Mr. Chessman came aboard as our CEO, he accompanied me to a drive around on Russell Island, where it was noted that there was probably a high percentage of people living rough in the bush, setting up humpies and things like that. And there was all sorts of reasons for that, and mental health is part of that too. And thankfully, through Mr. Chessman's efforts and directions of staff, council dealt with that really empathetically and managed to manage a slow process to get people referred off to services, and then we managed to bring the numbers down. There'll always be homelessness, we'll never get rid of it, it'll keep coming, but addressing it. So I'd just like to express my appreciation to the CEO and the staff, because they did wonders there. We didn't have a policy, and now I'm sure the policy will help reinforce those efforts and provide a better outcome for those homeless people throughout the city.
Councillor Edwards, I think I had Councillor Boglari. Anyone else? Councillor Hill and Councillor Mitchell, everyone's going to have another.
Oh, thank you. Like Councillor Edwards said, it is a growing problem, and from recent discussions, as a girlfriend of mine at the age of 68, through no fault of her own, has become homeless. Luckily, she has a very strong family and friends, and you know, we got her through that. But I was talking to officers, and that age group in particular are very vulnerable, because when they went to work, you know, they didn't have a lot of super and things like that. So it really brought this closer to me, and I thank the officers for the advice and help that they gave me at that time when I sought it. And I also remember a couple of years ago that we had a forum at the Redland Sporting Club on homelessness, and I was wondering, because this is evolving, it's changing, the demographics are different, we've got families, I too have had shelters in bushland in Hilliards Creek and also in Jeskin, a wetland for homeless people over the years. Is it timely to have another forum? You know, like the mayor said, she's having these discussions with Logan, together Logan and everything. Is it time for us to bring all our churches and community centres and that together to have a forum as well to assist us? Because, like we've said, it isn't so much councils. We don't have the resources for this. We need to bring others on board. Is it time for that as well? Just to give, like Councillor Hughes said, certainty to our community that we're doing all we can.
Through you, Mayor. Thanks, Councillor Boglari. We're taking at the moment a staged approach to that process that you speak of. So we're initially looking at the people that have like statutory and funded responsibility in that space. So in the first instance, we can actually scope what the opportunities are, and because there's some funding anomalies around what's funded and what gets delivered here in the city, and nobody's fault, it's just they're just anomalies, and so we're just checking into that, and then we'll work with all the funded service providers in that space, and then once we've got a position that's workable for everybody, I suppose, and we really know where that stands, then we can actually socialise that better with all the organisations and community organisations that are dealing in this space. And so you'll be aware that, you know, there's people that are funded to do it, there's people who do a lot of it without funding, there's voluntary organisations, there's the churches, so there's no shortage of well-meaning people who are responding to homelessness in our city, but I think we're taking a staged approach where we'll work with those that do receive funding and the state government and Department of Housing first, and Tenants Queensland and a number of those, and then we'll slowly work our way down that list to make sure that we talk with everybody, possibly in a forum at some stage, but certainly we're talking to all the backbone organisations initially, just so that we don't, because quite what we need to not do in a forum is to raise unrealistic expectations of what is available, and so we're trying to do that pre-work before we get down that path.
Councillor Mitchell?
Yeah, thanks. Yeah, a lot has been said. I was struck between the such an important issue, and one that, like mental health, someone was talking about it before. It isn't it how wonderful that you now speak openly about mental health, and the stigma around that is almost gone, and that's happened probably over the last decade, and it's wonderful. I think homelessness is another one of those issues. There's so many reasons for it, and removing that stigma so we can have these wonderful open debates and is, I think, an important part of that as well. So, and contrasting that with all the statutory and administrative and financial responsibilities that go with it, and that's so important to get the structure right, but at the heart of it is our wonderful, compassionate community, our compassionate organisation that needs to deal with the human. So this is about human beings, with all sorts of reasons. So yeah, it's really interesting, but it's great that we can speak so openly about it. It will be there in another 100 years. It's been there for the last few millennia, but how we manage it and look after the people in a balanced fashion is terrific. I'm also struck with how well we are as a organisation and a community beginning to collaborate at all sorts of levels on a number of issues, environmental, etc. This is another one that needs that. And I'll finish, because it's probably all being said, with a personal experience from just last week, where I was approached by a homeless couple recently fallen on hard times. Immediate contact with our officers, who made immediate contact with both not-for-profit and state agencies, and within, I think, a 12-hour period, that this particular story has not an ultimate happy ending, but these people are being assisted through the right channels. And so it's already working, and we've got a lot of work to do, and let's that stage approach, let's keep improving.
Yeah. Thank you, Councillor Mitchell. Councillor Hewlett.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. When Councillor Edwards spoke, he just sparked something in my memory that I thought was important. Years ago, my wife and I were involved in foster parenting, and most of the time we had little kids, but we had a teenager who was virtually homeless, getting displaced from her house every time her mum got a new partner or whatever the circumstances were. Yes, it's very sad and it's very confronting, but we found it one of the most rewarding parts of our life. And the only reason I bring it up is because I see it on the side of buses and big TV ads now about please sign up for foster parenting, because a lot of this youth homelessness probably wouldn't happen if people signed up for that and took these kids as teenagers. And that girl left our home a much different person, ended up getting married and having kids. So it was a really, it is hard, it was difficult having a teenager, let me tell you, particularly out of the circumstances. But it was really worthwhile. So I'd encourage the public to try and intervene before it even gets to this level and get involved in foster parenting. Thank you.
Councillor Hill, any other comments? Look, if I could just create a bit of a parallel as to where I think that this policy will last ahead, is that we 6 years ago didn't have a coordinated response to domestic and family violence in this city, and we now have a state government funded body that actually is funded to do just that. Homelessness is a similar issue where we need to make sure that all the organisations that do receive funding are using that funding adequately and efficiently to make sure that they are giving more than just a meal to people who are homeless, because they need more than just a meal. They need to find a way out of that situation, and that coordinated approach is probably a little bit of the gap that we've had, and we can now start to address that. I've already started to address that directly with ministers, but this also gives, as I said earlier, the imprimatur to our officers to be able to deal with some of those rather sticky situations. And look, in the story of the tent city, I want to just once again commend those officers who were involved. You know, it wasn't about dispersing these people, it was making sure that they were given the right information to get out of that situation, not just temporarily, but hopefully more permanently. And I do believe a lot of those people did find housing. So I just wanted to say that was a great show of compassion on behalf of our community, which I think that they would expect in a city like Redland. So small step, this is just a document that helps us continue to do that work. So thanks, Frank and team, and I'll hand back to Councillor Bishop to sum up, and then we'll put the motion.
Thank you. In summing up, I'd just like to identify that we've acknowledged that there's the work officers are doing, which is the statutory approach with the registered organisations. The request that I think everyone can benefit from in terms of the policy, and I would very much like to encourage councillors to have access to those supporting guideline documents. And to that second point, there's 150,000 citizens, some of whom have a deep interest in supporting this issue. I would like to see that this council provides outward-facing information about the issue of homelessness so that we can all deal with this together. If we just leave it to officers, it will be mostly dealing with the challenges, because we won't have done, as Councillor Edwards has suggested, early intervention and support. If we can do a public-facing document in preparation for the statutory approach as well as a community feedback loop approach, I think we will all move in a direction that's going to be regionally, we do not have a big issue with this as much as other areas, and that is to our strength, and I think it's something we can really capitalise on, so I'd like that policy to be as outward facing as possible. Thank you very much to officers for all the work that you do, and to all of the citizens who want to be involved. Hopefully this
policy in future and what we make available can help everyone to do that together as a city, because it definitely takes a village to keep the homeless feeling at home. Thanks.
Thank you, councillors. I'll put the motion. Those in favour? Those against? The motion's carried unanimously. All right, councillors. Item 14.1, moved by Councillor Gleeson, seconded by Councillor Bishop. Would you like to speak to it, Councillor Gleeson?
Thanks, Madam Mayor. The item 14.1 reports future use of community facility at Winter Memorial Park. For those at home and in the gallery, I'll just describe Winter Memorial Park. It's situated on Mount Cotton Road at Capalaba, about 200 metres south of the Moreton Bay Road intersection. It had a demountable building put on about 10 years ago for Boys Town, which later changed its date to Your Town. They vacated the building about 12 months ago, and it's remained vacant since then. Some months ago now, I had a meeting with officers, and I've asked for that demountable building to be removed, and I think at some point that park should go back to being a park. Since then, an issue has come up with Bayside Initiatives Group at Capalaba. Now, I haven't had a whole lot to do with them in the past, I'll be honest. But I have been down and spoken with some of the board a few weeks ago and seen some of the things that they do and how they operate. And now they've just had their state funding has been cancelled and runs out in June, and these guys will no longer be able to afford their rent in their current building in Veronica Street, which would make it very hard for them to continue operating. Now, Bayside Initiatives Group look after and support those most vulnerable in our community with mental health issues. They do referral work with Redlands Hospital, and they cater up to around 800 people a year within our community. And these guys are preventing suicide out there. This is not people sitting on yoga mats. This is very, very serious stuff out there. Unfortunately, I've actually had a fair bit of involvement, particularly with some men's groups over the last in recent years, and the suicide numbers out there are horrific. You know, 80% of the suicides in Australia are men. In 2017, as an example, there was 2,348 men suicided. The highest ratio, that's over 46 a week, by the way, in Australia. It's horrendous numbers. The highest ratio are men 65 and above. The second highest ratio are men 25 to 45. We've got real problems in our community, and these guys are looking after those most at risk in the Redlands. I find it absolutely horrific that the state government would dump their funding and leave our residents in the situation that they're in now.
Mr. Chairman, just the report, not accurate reporting from what I've read in the report on the funding.
Okay, so the actual point of order is?
Well, it's not factual information that's been provided by the council.
It's factual information, Mayor, and it's the reason why we're here today discussing this item.
Well, can I just get you to refer to the report, Councillor, please?
Page 2. Well, me?
Either or.
Page 281, second bottom says here, Big currently occupies an industrial shed in Capalaba and a commercial lease of land, which is financially unsustainable. The continuation of their services in addition to a potential decrease in contractual funding. This provides a unique location, da 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 da. So I'm not reading the word cancelled. Councillor?
I might just get an officer to explain that, if that's okay.
That's
just
certainly
to make
what
sure.
Has happened. Over $100,000 has been cancelled for you.
There is, I think there's been a contraction of funding available to these organisations, which is imminent. So I'll get...
Mayor, while the officer's just getting ready, I'd like to also acknowledge two board members from the Bayside Initiatives Group at the back of the room.
Thank you.
Great. Good morning, everyone. For those who don't know me, James O'Reilly, Strategic Advisor of Social Planning for Council. In the current environment, Bayside Initiatives Group, or BIG, receive about $156,000 a year. They're actually subcontracted to provide mental health support in a local government area. Critical service provider. They're unique. It's peer-to-peer, people with lived experience with people with a living experience. At the end of this financial year, given the tenuous funding environment, it's likely that two-thirds of their funding will be cut. They currently provide individual and group work. They will only be funded to provide group work, which is about less than half of what they currently do. they are in an industrial shed in Capella paying approximately $45,000 annually. It's a commercial rent premises that they inherited retrospectively from previous management. So they're in quite a tenuous funding change that they're aware of. It's likely that they don't have a secure environment rolling into the next financial year that they will completely drop off and that that funding will be redirected to other areas that can actually supply it. So they will still receive some level of funding, but effectively two-thirds of that will be gone.
That funding would go to someone outside of the city, is that correct?
Potentially.
The word cancel was used.
Okay, all right.
The word
cancel
was used, and that needs to be reduced funding. That's it.
Okay.
I support this.
Yeah,
but
yeah,
I'm
I know.
Just saying the word cancel.
So Councillor Gleeson, hello. I think you just need to rephrase that to reduced funding.
I was just trying to get clarity on that. Yes, it's reduced funding.
Yeah.
Yes, it is.
As the officer has just explained.
Which means they won't be able to afford their current
rent.
Their current position there.
Thank you. Councillors,
okay, so
it's been corrected.
Thanks, Mayor. As has been pointed out by the officer, they are the last service provider of this kind in the Redlands. They do referral work with the Redlands City Hospital, and yeah, there would be an outside organisation that would come in from afar. It certainly wouldn't be a drop-in centre. The current building that they operate out of has a pool table in one area, they have a lounge area with a telly, a bit of hangout space for people to talk to, and also have some private meeting rooms. It's a terrific facility. The building in Wintermore Memorial Park, look, it might get them out of strife in the short term. I don't think it's a long-term proposition for them. It's just not big enough to do that, but hopefully this will be able to keep their doors open until they can restructure the financing side of their business. I'm happy to support them. I want to see them go in there. I've changed my mind on the building. I want to keep it there for the short term. I have spoken with the board, like I said. I have told them that I will support them going in for 12 months while they try and reinvent themselves. But I seriously don't want to see them there in 10 years' time. I've been very, very clear that at some point I want that park permit to be returned to a park. Council has asked for your support on this. This is a fairly big issue in our community. I know we're not in the area of social services. We're stepping as far away as we can, but in this case we've got a vacant building. It's going to cost us very, very little money to support this group, and ask for your support.
Thank you. I've got a few people with their hands up. I've got. Can I just go through? I had Councillor Hughes was next. I'm assuming there's no speakers against. There is a speaker against. Just can I be sure? Yeah. Is there a speaker against? You want to speak against part of the motion? So, Councillor Edwards, speaker against.
I'd just like clarification that point one is looking to dispose of the asset after 12 months. Is that what the intent of the motion is? As available non-current for other than tender or auction to a community organisation. So is the intent...
Thank you. Andrew, could you explain that administrative term? Thanks.
Dispose is just a term used for leasing.
To get rid of the building. There is no decision here to get rid of that building today, if that's what you're worried about, Councillor.
No, thank you.
Because I would also be opposing that. It's important to have a community facility that close to public transport and a major centre. Okay. Tracy, Councillor Hughes.
Thank you, Mayor, and potentially James, I'm not sure who this would be directed at. Yesterday when we were discussing this, we talked about a permit to occupy as an alternate. Could you explain to us the difference and the benefits? Thank you.
Sure. Certainly, Councillor. At the end of the day, a lease is exclusive use of a premises, which in this instance, BIG would be supplying if the officer's recommendation is approved. a licensed occupier would not be an exclusive use, it would be a periodical arrangement where they could utilise a facility. A licensed occupier is what, or a permit occupier, which I think is the state terminology, which is what you use over sporting fields with different groups training or different licences to train. But in this instance, for service provision, it would be exclusive use, hence why we're recommending a lease.
Okay. Andrew, would you like to add to that?
Just say also leasing arrangements does provide sometimes a broader opportunity for funding arrangements. So.
I would imagine when it comes to bidding for state funding or otherwise, a lease would have greater value because it gives them security of tenure. And it's only, although it's one, only 1 year. I've had a few people who've had their hand up, so I just Councillor Bogliari, I think, and then Councillor Elliott, then Councillor Gallo.
Oh, thank you. I think, again, we're talking about a social issue, and like homelessness and domestic violence and suicide in all age groups is becoming more and more prevalent, and there's so much more stress seems to be on society. I don't exactly know where we're going, but somehow we do have to work all together, you know, to pick this up. I'm not sure, but I think previously it was mentioned that BIG was funded through Metro South. Is that correct? And that board decides where the funding through Queensland, yeah. So I was just, again, wanting to ask, can we start bringing these people to the table and trying to work out a whole of city? It's no good. I totally support BIG. I know they do fantastic work, and I hope the people sitting in the gallery realise that we really appreciate them and understand the absolute necessity for them to be able to continue. But going forward, we have to work out a sustainability thing for all these groups, a plan, and we've got to get all these people together. Is that happening, or is it?
Thank you very much, Councillor. That's an excellent question. I might try and tackle two questions at the same time, noting something that Councillor Gleeson said earlier about stepping out of the social service space. It's very correct. We don't deliver social services. However, in our social infrastructure strategy, which is currently being reviewed, we advocate on behalf of the community,
yes,
and for the funding of those services with the goal or end game to make them robust and seamless. And the way that we do that is to have primary, secondary and tertiary level suppliers. BIG's an example of a primary that would then refer onwards for case management. At the end of the day, we don't have any solidified benchmarks to advocate on behalf of how things should be or health checking how things are running. We're trying to generate that so that we can support council's strong position to advocate on behalf of those community groups. State government might have standard benchmarks in place, but given the, I guess, demographic composition, the social issues that you've recognised as well, we need to have a stronger stance on that as to how things should be funded more accurately, and that will enable us to do that.
Yeah, because I can only imagine the stress that the workers are under daily with the stories they must be hearing. And, you know, I know the little bit that I have, you take those stories home. So I can just imagine the stress they're under. And then if they're also under the stress of not knowing if in 6 months' time they're going to be able to help these people, that is something where maybe we can help. And if we can get that sustainability, assist them in that way, I think that's probably a big step council can take, and then they can get on with their job because they know they've got a premise, they've got funding, and they can just concentrate on what they do best.
To Councillor Bogliari, in my meeting with Minister Di Farmer last week, we talked about how we could gather the baseline data for our city across all the social needs of our community, because we tend to be relying on anecdotal information. So I try to give you some comfort in that we are trying to find that way to be able to measure the social health and need of our community. So we're looking for some support from the state to help us do that, as well as trying to advocate for those organisations that already exist and need to be sustainable. Councillor Elliott had a question.
Yeah, can I change that to a comment? And if you could give me a little bit of latitude. That's okay. Sorry? Oh no, I thought you were next. Sorry, I didn't want to jump in. We've got a bit of conflict here, because we're saying we'll give you a lease for a year, so they've got costs to do that. we're saying if they're going to get funding, they're going to say, the government's going to say, well, how long are you going to be here? And they say a year, they're not going to get funding. And that's why I think the PTO is a better way to go, and it's not out of the ballpark. Sorry? Well, the thing is that if they have a PTO, they have to look for another premises and seek funding, but the government's going to say, we would say, and every time we see a lease come to this place, we need 10 or 20 years or 30 years because we're going to do X. And I'm sort of concerned, we're going to give a year, and the first thing they're going to say, what's your lease tenure? And they're going to go, 1 year. And Councillor Gleeson's indicating that he doesn't want their long term. And I don't have a problem with being there for the year in the transition, but certainly I think it's a conflict going for money when you have a lease of 1 year and they're going to ask for more. And we're indicating we don't want any more than a year. So I'm trying to come to grips.
I think this is a bit of a stopgap measure, but I'll get James to explain. I understand what you're saying, but we have sort of a crisis at the moment. Yep. I understand. But let me just get James to respond.
So, Councillor, as the officer's recommendation provides, or the content of the report, the first year of their lease would basically on a peppercorn rate, other than the standard approach where the lessee would remunerate council for the cost of establishing the lease and they would pay the utility charges, so it's effectively free of charge in that instance. What that lease does is to provide continuity of service and to recalibrate their position in the market in the midst of that tenuous funding changes. Without that, come new year, that would completely dissipate and the most vulnerable members of the community would be left at a shortfall to fill no deficit. So beyond the term of a year, it may be the fact that big fall out in terms of their funding, but to be able to have a secure environment where they can recalibrate those services with other partners in the community ensures that that funding might be kept locally, that employment can be kept locally, and that those vulnerable members of the community don't have a disruption. A PTO wouldn't enable them to have a solidified exclusive use to continuity for those services.
Explore that. Are you saying just that last bit you said about continuity or supplying the service? What do you mean by that? Yeah, that's fine, but I'm just saying.
It would effectively secure their arrangement to continue to deliver those services. A PTO would not give them exclusive use over those premises.
Yeah, I do not dare. Councillor, they're very similar, but certainly a lease is a higher order tenure arrangement, which they can register on title and will give them exclusive use of that area. We typically only use permits to occupy on lower order occupancies when they're not exclusive and the risk isn't as high, if you like. So typically in this arrangement, our recommendation is that it's a tenure lease, not a PTO. Permits to occupy is usually just a personal contractual matter. A lease is typically a tenure where they can register on title and their rights will be stronger under the lease. So sure, there's subtle differences. Liability is typically probably better for us, if you like, under a lease. Everyone knows lease tenure arrangements, whereas PTO is generally not as strong as a lease. So.
Okay. It's just that wouldn't we be the ones that would, if anybody else wants to come in there, wouldn't we be the ones that have that vote, this council? So I'm sort of struggling with this because we're saying, oh, somebody else coming in, hang on, aren't we running the show?
I think the risk is reduced for both parties at the least because it's a much stronger legal arrangement.
That's
what
I'm trying to say, with
yeah.
$1,500 or $2,000,
yeah,
they haven't got the money.
Mm. And, look, I understand the intent, but I think the officer's recommendation has taken all those considerations on board. Okay, Councillor Bishop, who else has had their hand up that I've missed? Councillor Bishop.
Thank you. I want to acknowledge first of all the issue and the urgency and that Council has a potential solution for this organisation I've spoken also with members of this group previously and am pleased to see that there's an option
for them in this city to welcome their provision of this service. So that's the first point. I just want to acknowledge the urgency in this being brought to us. Brings me to the second point, the decision regarding the lease. This could have gone to a tender, but has actually come to us as an agenda item, which brings me to the third point. As a councillor, I'm hearing that there is a critical issue out in the community, and previously this has not been brought to our attention specifically, and I really hope, and as you've referred to, Madam Mayor, in your discussion with Minister Farmer, the potential for a social health needs assessment across the spectrum, I absolutely, emphatically encourage that to happen and have previously spoken about the need for cultural mapping, and that is looking at all the various needs across the city, those who are included, those who are excluded, those who are engaged in communities of interest, communities of practice. There is information that I don't feel as though I'm being given by officers to help me make a decision about this entity coming to us with a request for a parcel of land and tenure above others. And I would like us to have that clarified in terms of the needs across the city, because in the absence of having that broader cultural map of what is going on in our city, where is the social health, where are the cultural organisations that are looking for tenure, I find it difficult to be informed and make a decision in the best interests of our citizens over the long term. And I also have to acknowledge that this one-year lease is a stopgap. I want in the next year for our council officers to be very clear about what scale the solution of this proposed organisation can deliver. How inclusive can it be? What discussions need to happen? How much more information from the outside in, the bottom up and the top down, can we get to make sure that I am, as or anyone who after the next election sits here making a decision about this sort of thing, is informed about the temperature of what's going on in our community? Please, officers, can we deepen our understanding? And I refer specifically to the cultural plan 2008 to 2018, which has in it all of the assessment requirements and criteria to establish the blueprint for all of that work to have been done. It has not been progressed. We are in this situation because we haven't done that mapping. We must do that mapping so councillors like us can be informed by robust information from citizens about the cultural dynamics that are at play in this city. They're on the rise. We've seen them in a number of issues to do with how we plan for housing, how we plan for homelessness, how we plan for giving out properties to people. And we need to give this organisation, I think it's great that we're throwing them a year-long lifeline, but in that year, what are we going to do to inform the people who will make a decision about the relevance of this organisation above all the others that might come to us and say, well, we'd like a free place? I think it's really important that we step in and help this organisation on behalf of the many people who are impacted by mental health issues, and we only need to look at the last election to see how many more of them there are going to be. People are impacted by big binary Labor policy shifts between one side of government and the other, and those issues affect people on the ground, and I think as a local council, the more information we can get to inform decision makers about these sorts of issues going forward will be critical, and it will be bring great clarity for our community and for the service providers. So they're just my thoughts. Some of that some people might frown over and scratch their head, but I want officers to be able to provide councillors with information about where this application sits in the hierarchy across the city of all the other organisations that would like to do good work in behalf of our community in partnership with council, and we are the facilitators who should be able to design that through our policies and the way we make it clear to the decision makers. Thank you.
Councillor Hughes?
Just comment with Councillor Bishop and the passion that we all sharing around the table. There's not been one speaker against at all. We understand the vulnerability of our community. We understand the services that BIG are providing. We understand the desperation that this organisation has that has come to us basically begging for support and help. But this is not our core business. As James has said, this should not be here before us now. these issues of funding and health issues are clearly state government issues. I support this year-long help that we can give this group, but I do not support us carrying these groups, as Councillor Bishop has said, that come to us for a free building because they need to operate and support our community with their health needs. This is not our core business, and I'm just got to the end of my tether on this one. This is not appropriate. Kick back to the state government. Thank you, Mayor, for all your conversations and advocacy on our residents' behalf and our organisation's behalf. Enough.
Thank you, Councillors. Any other comments? I thought you did this before, Councillor. Councillor Goller.
Madam Chair, through you, I wholeheartedly agree with Councillor Hughes, and it really is a state issue, but we are sort of that front line in the trenches with the community, and it's up to us to continue our lobbying to the state government to start delivering on infrastructure that's required, not only in these types of social services, but roads, hospitals, etc. As we grow, as mandated by the state government, we need that infrastructure and we need that further support. So I wholeheartedly support this application or this report, and I think we need to really go forward together as a team to strongly advocate in support of you, Madam Chair, at the state level to keep services coming and to make sure that our infrastructure is delivered. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Golay. Look, if there's no other speakers. Did you want to speak, Councillor Hill? Oh, sorry. Oh, please be okay. Well, unfortunately, I'm going to have to listen to the drone in my voice. Look, I just wanted to acknowledge that we don't always have to have a great deal of detail to make decisions like this. We are in our communities all the time and we understand the needs by just talking to people in our community, and so sometimes we just have to act. That's how that building ended up in the Winter Memorial Park. Because there was a real need for young people who were at risk of disengaging to have support through a process which ended up being a mentoring program, and it was very successful until the funding dried up. So this is what we're up against. I have to say, health is in a state of flux. You know, we have the NDIS, which is all about consolidating, and the smaller organisations, those local organisations that we have valued for many years, are falling away. So it's not just state government, it's federal government and it's state government. And so what happens, and what always happens, that's why council supplied childcare for so many years, because the state and the federal government weren't acknowledging the need. We're on the ground, we hear it, and we react and we deliver. It is another great example of, as has been said, of cost shifting down to local government, but we don't have the opportunity to turn a blind eye, and nor should we, because we're all here to serve everybody for all their needs in the community. So while it's in a state of flux, and I would suggest, so I might be wrong and I hope I am, that this state of flux will go on for some time as all of these new policies at federal level and state level sort of filter down to us at local level, and we do need to keep an eye on that, which is why we need to make sure we have got our finger on the pulse and the thermometer of what the needs are in our community, not so that we can fill the gap, but so that we can make sure that the state government, the federal government, are on notice for doing the things that they are funded and designed to do for our community. But I am not going to turn my back on anybody in our community that needs somewhere to sleep, needs some peer support for whatever issue. Domestic and family violence, you name it. I'm not turning my back because my door is too close to them for them to knock on, and I can't turn a blind eye. So it's cost shifting, it's a state of flux, and we'll never have all the information we need to make decisions rapidly. Sometimes you just got to go with your instinct and your gut, and today certainly I'm really happy to be able to use that building, which I suffered greatly for, to move to that park, I can tell you. And I'm really grateful that it's going to serve another social need in our community in the interim. And hopefully, with that in place, we can all do our bit, not just me, knocking on the doors of our state and federal members to make sure that these sorts of services are funded in our community, for our community, so that they don't have to travel to other parts of the region
to get the support they need, because they are the vulnerable people who don't, they find it hard to travel outside of the city. They need that support. So once again, I'll hand back to Councillor Gleeson to sum up, but I thank the officers for bringing this to our attention in a timely manner to allow them to recalibrate and do what they need to do. Well done, Big.
Thanks, Mia. Look, thanks, everybody. It sounds like it's going to get the vote. Everything's been said, I think, that can be said, except for one thing, and that's this. I don't believe the state government or Queensland Health really knows what's going on the ground in Capalaba or in the Redlands. I think a decision like this and funding changes are probably done at a very, very high level, and the case of Big and there's another organisation out there as well, they've been victims of this. I think this is going to get a little bit of traction in the media, and I really hope there's a bit of pushback on Queensland Health and the state government. Ultimately, it'd be fantastic if they realise what they've just done and they do a backdrop and reinstate their funding, and Big can stay where they're at. I mean, the building they're currently in is ideal for them. It's perfect. And hopefully that can be done in a short time frame, and they won't have to move into a demountable as a temporary solution. If they do, I wish them all the best. They will need to find some new income streams. I have spoken with them about a couple of options maybe as well. Wish them all the best in that area, but I do hope that we can get enough pressure put on Queensland Health and the state government in the short term to make them realise their errors and to make them reinstate Big's funding. With that, I'll put the motion. Thank you.
I'll put the motion. Those in favour? Yes, carried unanimously. Thank you for that discussion, councillors. Councillors, there is no mayoral minute. Oh, sorry, that was unanimous. Sorry. Notice of the motion. There's no notice of motion that I'm aware of. No urgent business. So we'll move into our confidential session, councillors.
So, Mayor, I'd like to move 19.8 come out of confidential and goes into open forum.
I don't think you can actually do that. I just need to take some advice. So we're going to move into confidential. I think what you could do, councillor, is I'm just trying to work out. The order.
I'm looking to Andrew over here as to how we would normally deal with it, because it's already classified as confidential. You'd have to have some discussion, and when you come out, you could make a decision to make that information not confidential, I guess. That would be within your power, but you'd want to take some advice on doing that.
Yeah. All right. So we move into confidential. Councillor Gleeson can ask to move out of confidential for that item, and it will be minuted that he was wanting that item discussed in open session. So Councillor Gleeson, have you heard that? So you will be able to move, when we get to that item, you'll be able to ask that be discussed in open. Is there any, that councillors need to go into confidential? No, I don't think so. Oh, we've just got the late report. Yeah. Moving to confidential, councillors. Move, Councillor Elliott, seconded, Councillor Boglari. Those in favour? Those against? Motion is carried. Those in favour? Councillor Boglari, Councillor Mitchell, Councillor Golay, Hewlett, Edwards, Elliott, Hughes, Tolte, Bishop, Williams. Those against? Councillor Gleeson. Thank you, councillors. Thank you to members of the public and the press in the gallery. And actually, it's just, I think, that Cheryl's the only one left. Thanks, Cheryl. No?
No?
Oh, sorry, Mr. Taranto. Mr. Second. Can I please have a move for item 19.1, mover and seconder? Postal Services move. Councillor Elliott second and Councillor Bishop. Those in favour? Those against? Motion's carried unanimously. Item 19.2, the financial report. Those in favour? Move Councillor Edwards seconded. Councillor Mitchell, those in favour? Those against, that is unanimous. Item 19.3, move Councillor Elliott, seconded Councillor Gleeson. Those in favour? Those against? Motion is carried unanimously. Item 19.4,
The sponsorship applications, move Councillor Boglari, seconded Councillor Mitchell. Those in favour? Those against? The motion is carried. Those in favour, Councillor Boglari, Mitchell, Golay, Hewlett, Edwards, Elliott, Hughes, Tolte, Bishop, Williams. Those against, Councillor Gleeson. Item 19.5, move Councillor Hughes, seconded Councillor Edwards. Those in favour? Those against? Motion is carried unanimously. Item 19.6, move Councillor Mitchell, seconded Councillor Boglari. Those in favour? Those against? The motion is carried unanimously. Item 19.7, move Councillor Boglari, seconded Councillor Edwards. Those in favour? Those against? The motion is carried. Those in favour? Councillor Boglari, Councillor Mitchell, Councillor Golay, Councillor Hewlett, Councillor Edwards, Councillor Elliott, Councillor Hughes, Councillor Bishop, Councillor Williams. Those against? Councillor Tolte, Councillor Gleeson. Item 19.8, move Councillor Boglari, seconded Councillor Mitchell. Those in favour? Those against? The motion is carried. Those in favour? Councillor Boglari, Councillor Mitchell, Councillor Hewlett, Councillor Edwards, Councillor Elliott, Councillor Tolte, Councillor Bishop, Councillor Williams. Those against? Councillor Golay, Councillor Hughes and Councillor Gleeson. Item 19.9, moved Councillor Mitchell, seconded Councillor Edwards. Those in favour? Those against? The motion is carried. Those in favour? Councillor Boglari, Councillor Mitchell, Councillor Golay, Councillor Hewlett, Councillor Edwards, Elliott, Hughes, Tolte, Gleeson, Williams. Those against? Councillor Bishop. Thank you, Councillor Hewlett. Item 19.10, I move a thanks. Moved Councillor Edwards, seconded Councillor Boglari. Those in favour? Those against? The motion is carried unanimously. And Councillor Hewlett has left the room, declaring his perceived conflict of interest. Councillors, thank you for that. I'll close the meeting at 1:13.